August 9, 2012, F-POM.
All right. Any add-ons to the agenda?
Any we might give one more LOMO update.
A LOMO update? One more LOMO update. The last LOMO update.
You should let them know that your agenda is open.
Say what?
And Tammy, you have the John Day North ROV.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So there have been some additions to the agenda. We'll be starting with Portland District updates before Walla Walla so that Dave Hamernick can.
Yeah.
I'll call for help if I need to.
Noah, Fish and Wildlife, you guys got anything to add?
Well, I sent Tam an email the other day. I don't know if you got
it. It's on there.
Is it?
Okay. Yep.
I was looking real quick. I couldn't find
it. It's not on your printed version. It's on Burns.
Thank you very much.
Gary, Trevor, Ed, you guys good? You ready to rock and roll?
Might think of something as I go along here.
We done?
No, that's
hectic. I've had a pretty hectic week, too, so let's take it easy on each other today.
I do want to think about, the one thing I want to talk about is money. Burn.
Money
if we save money through other actions, I assume that we could funnel those towards things that need to be done, like wire ropes of the dowels and trunnion pins of the dowels. Some folks have told me, well, it's not quite so simple. You can save money here, but then it goes to the Everglades or something. I don't know. I want to talk about how we can, if we save dollars through whatever, O&M dollars, not CRFM or any of that.
Right.
But O&M dollars, how we get those funneled towards, because if we're cutting back on fish issues, fish programs, and saving money, maybe transport or county or whatever, I want to make sure that that money gets funneled into needed areas and not buying extra trucks from the
Well, I mean, that money is considered fenced for Fish and Wildlife Program. Mm-hmm. So the appropriated piece comes in, Bonneville Power matches it, it's fenced until a certain time of the year, usually July 1st if you don't have a plan for it. So if you cut back on transport and you can add in, I mean, your ceiling is what you get from headquarters to division, so it's going to stay in the program.
Yeah, we don't need to talk about it right now. I just want to make sure that we have a chance here.
Yeah, it will stay in the program.
Ad hoc discussion, but I definitely have, I've seen some areas where we're starting to look at programs.
Right.
And McNary Transport might be one. The Delta Call program, which we're going to talk about, maybe another. And I know it's not a huge amount of money, but if we can buy one wire rope, at least if we can just start chipping away at that Dallas issue, because that is a bad issue. We have a unit 9, or bay 9 is out, and that's the number one bay we need outside of the first 8 to run. So we have a bad issue. Mm-hmm. We already know what kind of lateral flows we get there. That we need to fix that.
I hear you.
Any way to fix it.
We should have a separate discussion, though, because doesn't that come out of joint and large cap?
There's all that stuff. I know. There's all that stuff that I don't understand. I just want to, you know, my point is that if we're saving dollars on fish programs, we got to be putting those dollars back to improving fish survival. That's all.
Yeah, so, you know, bigger picture, the only comment from Walla Walla I'm going to make is that as we move forward, our expectations for 14 may be 80% that we'll get of what we got in 13. So that's mm-hmm. part of the reason to save money is that to maintain programs.
Yeah, well, that's one thing. Right. I'm going to be a lot less interested in saving money if I know it's just going to get it back or whatever.
Well, it's not going to go out of the program, though.
Yeah,
regardless.
I mean, essentially what you'll do is just start, part of the reason for the adult count task force was if and when we get to the point where we can no longer afford the current level of service, what would be the first thing that we think would be reasonable to take off?
Okay. Well, but there are also things that need to be done that we're not going to be done.
And that's okay, I think, to prioritize. You know, it seems like when I first came to this meeting 9 months or a year ago, Byrne was asking for putting together a list for his district commander to go to the general, and I know Walla Walla did it from our AMRIP database, and you guys kind of said that you would write support letters from the various fisheries agencies to try to get more money, but it does get back to kind of that congressional appropriation, and then subsequently also the chunk of money that's available for large cap, which most of this stuff falls into unless it's less than 200K. So anything over 200,000 is small cap, And actually, the small cap is almost tougher sometimes to get because there's less of it than the large cap. But, you know, a little bit of money inappropriated isn't often enough. Like in the case of the McNary Washington Shore stop logs, we've been struggling to get those fixed for a number of years. And part of the reason is that we need quite a substantial amount of appropriated tail, the money we get from Congress, to match up with the large cap. And we're not being able to find it. You know,
that's a lot of, it's mostly core speak. I don't know all the details associated with large cap, small cap, and all
that. It's a reasonable thing to request about, you know.
The main thing is, though, if we're talking about cutting back to save money, you know, the assumption is that that's, well, good. You know, we can buy some other stuff that we really need. And if that's not the case, then...
That's the case.
I need to know that.
I will make sure any cutbacks go back into the program. I mean, it's not going out of the program. It just happens the program shrinking.
That's right.
I understand that, too. So that's always a problem.
Any support from your office in terms of a letter, et cetera? We're also trying at Division in headquarters is to get a line item in the O&M budget for CRFM-related O&M, which is big. That would be big.
Yeah, you can go back several biops and see my attempts to get that down.
Yeah, well.
Well, if we got that, that would open up some of what you're asking about, actually.
All right, so let's get going here. So if there's no more add-ons, I'd like to, anybody on the phone for starters? And let's just go around the room for intros. Start with myself, Bernard Clatt from the Corps.
Ed Meyer, NIMS.
Ann Sutter, Corps, Walla Walla.
Deb Bowes, Corps.
Ken Phone, Walla Walla District.
Scott Bezos, EPA. Sean Tackley, Portland District.
Dan Kamernick, Portland District.
Christine Peterson, BPA.
Lisa Wright, Corps RCC.
Amy Wazindal, Corps John D. Dem.
Bob Cordy, Corps for the Dallas.
Bill Hedlund with NOAA.
Ann Stevenson, Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife.
David Wills, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Gary Fredericks, NOAA Fisheries.
Trevor Condor, NOAA Fisheries.
John Rursich, Portland District.
Tammy Mackey, Portland District.
And there's a sign-in sheet going around?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope, I found it today.
Okay, well.
But I got y'all.
We are all logged in on the recorder. Any comments on July's FPOM meeting minutes? If not, I'd like to approve those.
There were several edits. I got those all.
That went out. All right.
The 8-megabyte document.
Consider those approved. We'll get right into the action items. The first one is Walla Walla's McNary Crane.
And there's no update,
there's
so
no
we're
update.
Just pushing it out.
Okay. And then the Portland District, we are good. So we can jump all the way down to updates 3.1. First one is mid-season ROV inspection. Results for Bonneville. And then we also have some other ROVs that we're going to talk about. Scheduling for the Dalles and John Day. So the mid-season, the Bonneville 7-8 August.
We switched Portland and Walla Walla.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I don't see that.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
I'm kind of working on my own agenda today.
Okay, well.
It's a little different color and organized, so.
I added color.
Let's keep us, you know, up to speed. Huh?
All right, so. I probably would like to see a copy of theirs, too.
No, I
don't.
Okay,
you just switched them, okay.
And if it's in purple, I added it to yours. It's not on it.
So what's the result of the Dalles and John Day?
For the Dalles, we did the east grading inspection last week. Everything looked good. And the north was postponed because we had some clearance issues, and we're actually doing that today.
Okay. And then John Day.
John Day, we did the south on the first. There were no problems with any panels. We didn't find any bolts here that were missing. And the north as well. The grating at the north will be replaced this coming winter within the scope of the improvements program, which is coming up, the construction. So it went great. We had the service provided by Diving Safety Office. I was very impressed with this particular piece of equipment. This is the first time I've seen a commercial size ROV equipped with two sonars, one 360 and one forward-looking. It was fantastic. It was so easy to navigate because you always knew where you were. Before, when we had only video, that's what was the prior standard. It was always guessing, where are we? And a long cable was always, you know, it could have been done. It was able to cover the world, but not as easily.
So your John Day North inspection, because of the effects of spill, you weren't able to complete it, but you want to complete it on the 6th of September, is that correct?
That's outside of the fishway.
That's
for the undermining.
That's the undermining.
And that's why Dave's here today, is to, we were proposing, and Dave can speak to the details better than I can, but proposing to do a follow-up ROV at that entrance, because the first one wasn't successful on September 6th. And you can talk about the schedule and rationale for that.
Yeah, the whole idea is during the improvement projects that Merrill was talking about the first season, the divers, they were down there, and they mentioned that we had some undermining of the fish liner, and we didn't get a good survey at that point to see what the extents of the undermining is. So the whole scope of this work is to put an ROV down there so we can get a good, very good and clear idea of what the extent of the undermining is. Our first attempt was unsuccessful due to high flow, and we'd like to go in there again and just to see what the issues are, if there are any, and how big they may be, so we can address them.
And how long will it take, and what do you need done at the project to do it?
Well, the last time we anticipated it would take 2 hours, so I don't see why it would take any much longer than that. So we just drop it in. And
yeah, it should take less than 2 hours, and that's including the clearance procedure and everything, which is fairly simple in this case. That's going to be also after the end of spill season, and that was the problem
right.
last time. The spill was the actual cause, because the water surges were too much for the ROV to be safe to deploy.
So the operation would involve dialing down AWS flow, so you just have the ladder flow for about 2 hours.
Yeah, so time of day, is there a preference here?
For the afternoon, sometime.
Sometime in the afternoon, any
so
comment?
How long from the moment you affect the ladder, so from the moment the ladder is fast, so
2 hours.
Is that the 2 hours, or is that just the time it takes to do the thing? I mean,
no, 2 hours.
The time you shut down, start shutting down AWS until you're back up.
Including the clearance procedure.
2 hours total.
Noon?
All the fish see.
High noon?
Midday?
Midday?
Yeah. Terrible time of the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right, I know.
Yeah, I mean, this would be much better
to be put
off.
We discussed that in-house, too, about the time of year. And this has everything to do with making sure if we do it any later, the contractor's going to have a real hard time if there is an issue. Coming up with the plans and specs and construction plan for how to the issue. So
you're waiting for no spill. You want no spill. You have to. You can't get it done now. And
right.
If you're assuming the same problems, spill. I mean, our total river's dropped to 200 or less.
A little
over. Some of the, and it's supposed to stay there through the end of the month, right? From what I saw.
Hopefully.
That's
way down, but
that's what the forecast was. And then drop precipitously after the end. So, I guess my question, my comment there is at 200, is that with the 30% or 40%, is that where we at 30% now since the study's done? So 30% spill at 200, is that still too much?
Because it's not going to be any spill.
Right now.
Right now.
They're
concerned. Yeah, that thing cannot operate in any kind of flows.
You tried it now, you couldn't do it.
You tried it earlier with the flows quite a bit higher. That's all I'm saying. Right? Was it a 40% or a 30% day? I mean, I'm just asking the question. Now that the flows have dropped off and spills dropped off, are we at a level where maybe you could get it done earlier, or do you really have to do it after spills?
So I guess it all depends on how much turbulence there is in the area, depending on relative to the decreased flow. I don't know. I can't answer.
Can you judge that, or can somebody judge that by going out and looking at it?
They ended up shutting down six spill bays.
They can't operate that thing.
The
thing is huge, and it grabs any kind of flow, grabs it, and shoots it around.
With spill?
Yeah. With spill.
The spill, it was just, it's not doable to spill at all.
Okay.
Can you just shut off a couple bays?
We did that.
That
we
shut down the water's trail. Yeah. It made the surges higher, longer wavelength, and all of this. It'd be better to ask for a 2-hour shut off the spill.
Yeah. I mean, now.
No.
I'd rather have it now than.
You shut down the spill completely. Right. Except for TSWs, I guess.
That's a good point, Scott.
It's more critical now.
Right.
Let's ask for that.
Right. I mean, we were well outside of the majority of the run of Fall Chinook. If you could schedule it mid-month, I mean, we're still going to have steel. I mean, it's, I don't know what the adult counts are. Pretty slow. Steelhead numbers should be up right now. Chinook shouldn't be picking up yet until another couple of weeks. So. And then they're really going to pick up. And I don't know John Day and Bonneville's going to watch. But I know like the first week of August, or first week of September,
that's
right here,
you're in.
Yeah, how about if we see if we can do it mid-month? It's even better for us.
If you could do a mid-month with a 2-hour spill, yet I think that'd be better for fish overall.
In midday?
In midday, yep.
Yeah, I think so. We can make that work.
Yeah. What time of day do we
noon.
Recommend if we should shut?
Midday, I don't think it matters that much. I mean, spill passage is pretty much a flat downhill for juveniles, but yeah, like right now, there just aren't that many passing. So you look at the index at John Day and see what we have for juvenile passage.
We'll still have to cut the ladder down, though. So.
You still have to take a ladder down, but it'll be our data.
But no adult.
Yeah.
But now we have low numbers.
You have lower numbers of fish trying to pass now than you do in August, or the first week of September. So that's just.
But you'd still probably want to shoot for a midday because
right.
of the ladder.
Right, exactly.
So do you guys prefer midday then, like noon?
Yeah, just pick noon. Noon to 2, if you can just keep the spill out, it's to 2 hours. And that, I know that's going to work for you guys. You got to push more buttons. Probably better for fish overall.
Yeah, I think that's a better operation.
Actually, noon was higher than the rest of the month yesterday.
But that's where you encounter my job, where they're entering the ladder.
That's a couple of hours before they get up there.
Sometimes they'll shoot that thing.
We have about 1,300 fish passing.
I mean, anytime during the day, it's going to be not
this is our North Atlantic.
They basically stem.
Steelhead?
Steelhead are
so
about 1,100, and then.
Maybe it'd be 10 o'clock would be better. Yeah.
Well, later
September, we're going to be peaking pretty good, probably.
Yeah.
Well,
it's today.
A
couple hours.
This is yesterday.
Yeah. So as long as like 2
just this
row. We'll guess ourselves to death on this. Whatever works for these guys.
Yeah, but they so if we do noon, that's okay with you guys?
Mm-hmm. And do you have a date?
You're talking mid-August?
Mid-August.
Well, you know, I got to check with staff availability, especially the ROV availability. So can I go ahead and check with those guys and see when they have and get back to Sean?
Right, I just emailed Todd Manny, see what he says.
The
sooner the better.
So,
okay. All right.
We'll just... we'll get those dates together and send it out, and so you know it's going to happen, and then
we'll have it in an MOC.
Do we need to coordinate TMT, or what's the ultimate?
What's that?
Do we need to coordinate through TMT so next Wednesday get the blessing, or do you want to?
I think generally, I mean, as long as it was coordinated in the regional forum, that generally suffices for legal issues associated with spill containment short duration for fish operations.
Okay.
Is that a sufficient statement, or is that something you think we should do?
Check on it. I agree we should be able to do this, but
right.
if not, let's...
Okay, good point. Scott,
is cool. All right, so we'll come so back with a memo on that and finalize it.
Let me ask you an ignorant question here, but if we do a 2-hour spill outage, is there enough capacity behind the reservoir to allow 2 hours?
John,
do
you
have
this
town
there's
big.
Yeah, John, there's plenty of turbines.
Yeah, for 200 river, it's the problem.
All right, so we'll get that information back out to the region as soon as we can.
Thank you.
While we're on John Day.
Since we're on John Day, we have this TSW removal scheduled for the daytime on 31 August.
This is just for your information. So you know it's
just for information that... the TSW because we went to a horse work at midnight when the spill season starts and ends. So it's going to be done during daytime hours when we shut it down. But the spill still will be continuing, but without the TSW until midnight.
Okay. All right, so the next one is the Dalles Spill Bay 9 trunnion pin. Bob, any latest news on that? Huh?
Still no updates, no still the same.
Red tag, do not use under penalty of death.
Increase as it did since we last talked, so.
But it's also going to go to, it's going to be a contractor? Or is it in-house? Because, you know, if I get end of year funds.
Yeah, it'd be contract.
Do we have plans and specs written for that and everything ready to go?
Right now, there's nothing because there's no money for it. I mean, there's no money to even look at it.
So right. That's what really concerns me.
Right.
That is such a high priority.
Right.
Especially the last couple of years.
So can you get together how much for burn, how much could take your plans and specs? Because there's a good chance there'll be enough to cover this into your funds.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
You've got to be positioned to do it.
That's right.
And I've lit enough fires on the other side. Okay. I think you're going to get it. Let's not miss the opportunity.
Yeah.
So now at some point we're going to have to figure out, because the project is just waiting for joint funds to work on the spillway period. And if funds do drop, the number one priority is the spillway crane. So if funds drop.
But how big is the spillway crane?
Yeah, what's the cost differences here?
I guess the pin's the cheapest.
I don't know the differences.
Okay. All right, well, I'm going to take this one and I will get a hold of the Dalles and the OPM and find out what the costs are and get the plans and specs at least ready to go in case.
Can you lay out a memo to that POM of what you come up with on that?
Yeah.
I think that's probably the most important O&M thing I can see out there, at least from a fiscal.
In fact, I'll do that for each of the three Columbia projects. What are the top three priorities, fish and wildlife, and if we have end of year funds, how we're going to, just so you guys know.
There's a lot of stuff out there right now.
Oh, yeah.
We did have a ballpark figure at one time.
It's like, it was like 200K, I thought. But, I mean, end of year funds are coming up.
Yeah, I need to double check on that.
It might be not the highest priority for the project, but if, you know, the crane's 1 million and we got 250,000 sitting there.
Yeah.
Can you do the trunnion pin without the crane?
Yeah, because the crane is mainly for bulkheads.
Mm-hmm. So they're not linked to where one has to be done before the other.
The crane was just mainly, I mean, they're just limping it along right now.
Yeah. I recognize that's a problem, too.
So
that will.
Not
at the So the thing, I mean, if anything happens to break down,
it'd be awesome if you could, have email or put it on somebody's calendar.
Right, it's
going to be a
horse. Yeah, okay.
All right. Okay, so let's move on to the next one, which is Bonneville Spill Bay 15. Bonneville, are you on the phone? I don't think anybody's on the phone. I don't know what happened to Houseman. He was planning on coming.
Yeah, he's our fearless leader for one of our.
Is it dialed in?
I guess we'll have.
Yeah,
Tammy dialed it in.
Yes.
He was. He was here yesterday, and he told me he was planning to come down.
Very well, we just delay that one.
Yeah, I'll delay that until I was expecting him to be here, so I don't know what happened.
On his way.
Let's skip down to John Day South Lamprey Trap update. I don't think you guys have that. That was just added on by Sean.
Yeah, I just wanted to give everyone a heads up. But this morning I sent out a 60% EDR for the John Day South Ladder Lamprey Trap concept. I think it was mentioned at Bitterwick, but I wasn't at Bitterwick last week. So
it was.
Okay.
It was mentioned. Okay. And it's got the.
Yeah, I saw Ed had printed it out. And the idea here, it's a pretty small project. So the design timeline, backing it out, we're shooting for construction this winter. So, we're looking at a couple of weeks. You know, for a 60% and a couple of weeks for 90%, et cetera. So starting on plans and specs by in October or something.
How big is this thing?
It's going to be very big if they're going to finish plans and specs.
Behind the count station, the picket leads at the south ladder, so everything will fit in that space.
Recognize
it's
that.
It's basically a flume system to a, if you can picture a short LPS, more or less,
right.
To a draft
okay. Right.
That you can hoist out, and it
the whole
will
thing
serve
will hoist
two
out.
Functions.
You can hoist the entire...
Be able to hoist the trap.
I'm joining the conference.
Okay, but there's other stuff that'll stay in the water.
Correct. So the idea here is it serves two functions. It allows collection of lamprey for research and tribes, but also hits on that counting of lamprey behind picket leads. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have a trap in place that you can enumerate without using four cameras.
Water flows through that area. So does this in any way change the hydraulics?
That's, so Steve Schlenker's on the PDT, and that's definitely one of the first things that we brought up when this concept came to us initially, was wanting to make sure we don't screw up hydraulics.
Yeah, I don't want to see the top window hydraulics go haywire on
absolutely.
Us. So that's going to be critical. Ed's looking at it. I see we have a short fuse on the review. It's the 20th.
Correct.
Right.
That's
I'm
why
driving to Iowa once I leave this meeting, and I will be back in for 2 weeks, so I'll miss that.
And that's why I wanted to make sure I mentioned it.
Okay.
So if you
otherwise, there's no other impacts on salmonids.
Correct.
So it's just the structure and hydraulic influence, whatever that might be.
Yeah, there are modifications to picket leads, but it's not increasing space. It's decreasing because they're. One of our concerns was getting shad into the system.
Mini jacks.
What about noise? I mean, how often are they going to be operating and moving stuff around?
The operations hasn't been discussed yet, so
if you build it, they will come. So
we're planning. I would assume daily, but just like with anything else, that we would want to time that to not have problems.
Yeah, like a nighttime sort of thing. I mean, if they're going to be handling stuff and they get their, scent on there, it's just enough. Or if there's noise associated with going up and down and all the hydraulic waves and stuff like that. Just activity is an issue.
Yep, I agree.
So
that's the kind of stuff to be, I guess I would advise commenting on.
Yeah, we'll look
and
at
it, the... And I'm still, because of the schedule... My edits to the text are ongoing. I think I sent this in my email. I said,
sit in the hot seat, buddy.
Section 4, which is biological considerations.
Yep.
I think Brent Welton, who's the TL on this, had just copied and pasted some info from the John Day North ladder mods. So I'm going to be going through and probably completely changing all of that.
Okay.
More
what percentage is this again? 60 or 30?
60.
All the 60.
Okay.
So you'll have a
but it sounds like it's more like 30 to 60.
Exactly.
Which means
the biology is usually the 30% level, and then we go from there.
So. Yeah, so the criteria and the background discussion should be pretty up to date.
Okay.
So I would focus on that.
Yeah,
so exactly. Other stuff is kind of just going to be supporting it.
Fed's going to be your lead on this one, Trevor, so I won't have a chance to look at it. Not with that time.
Shit. Okay. All right, well, now that Ben's back in the house, we can go back to Bonneville Spillway 15 hoist.
First 2 weeks in September.
Woo-hoo!
New wire ropes on.
No more 2.9.
Supposedly, yeah. No more 2.9. So, yeah, that was the only thing holding it up, really, into spill and wire ropes, and they were purchased just waiting to
be. Nice job. Good news. How about...
I don't even know. Yeah, they're
shell game.
Shuffle them all around.
Shuffle
them
around again.
Everything should be good. Yeah.
Good. Good news.
Before we go on to the next one, I got an email from Todd Manny, who's our dive ROV. He is available on the 13th of August to do that.
Good.
So I told him to plan on it. That's the only
that's
day he's available, and then he's...
That's a great time.
...out of town, so...
That's perfect.
So we're going with the 13th. We can do it. Got it?
No problem.
You okay with that, Sean?
13th? Yeah,
okay.
That's next Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Female color month. Those adults, lower adults.
Next Monday.
Monday?
Okay.
Oh, it's Monday.
Yeah, I was thinking today was Thursday.
Okay. All right, we're going to jump to 3.1.6, which is Bonneville Fish Unit Dredging. Update?
Survey?
Still moving forward, yeah, survey this week, today I believe. And then, yeah, there was a little bit of a hiccup with, I don't know if it's really a hiccup so much, it's just a communication issue as far as the details of disposal and those sort of issues, but I think that's all figured out. There's a site visit today as well with environmental folks to look at disposing on the east end of Cascades Island, but it'll be, you know, several feet of sand, so they just want to make sure there's a plan.
Just don't make a turn island.
Yeah, just make a new island. That was great.
I don't know what it'll be. It's a goose island right now, but I don't know. So, but they're moving forward. It should be good to go, I think.
Okay, great.
Let's keep going.
Yeah, that's pretty good. He's been another good news so far.
I know. You're on a roll, Ben. How about Gantry 7 outage and summer ops? We're good.
Everything's going smoothly.
Tammy will answer this one.
Okay, get the tomatoes out.
One more.
No, that's not until BPA updates. We are not tying
into it's not done. No. I don't say we're done forever.
The memo is complete, and Gantry 7 is out of service. We have screens in 11, 12, and 18.
Those guys have that thing tore completely apart. Just haven't put it back together, gave them new parts, and we're ready to go. What's the problem?
Yeah.
This memo is completed, and I am not reopening it.
What kind of an answer
not
is that?
Even,
for the record.
I know. She didn't even, why'd you put it on the agenda?
Because I wanted to provide it as an update.
It, not just she just wanted to tell you guys you can't comment anymore. Sorry. All right, 318 is Unit 11 status.
That's a hippo.
Unit 11 status. Come on, let's hear it.
That was less impressive. It's no different, really, than last time. They took it apart. Jesus. They ran a scope down it to see if they could identify oil leak source in the Kaplan pipes. That wasn't the case. The threads that they thought was going to be the case was not. So they are putting it back together to pressurize it and see if they can figure out. They're probably not going to figure out much. If oil's ended up in the hub, then it's going to be unstacked.
Yeah. That's a year and a half, probably.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Be a year for unstack and restack, and a half a year for whatever work needs to be done.
I hope it's under warranty.
Well, okay. So I'd like to make a formal request that we scrap that unit, scrap it completely, and replace it with a fish-friendly turbine unit under your OEM funds. You have a lot of
Wow.
Based on the Ice Harbor
this
design.
This guy's on drugs.
You're dreaming.
I'm just making a request. Okay,
all
you
right.
Guys can say no. But this thing has been out since 2008.
Really?
So, and now we're talking maybe 4 years, 6 years, 12 years, who knows what. Why not, if the thing is that problematic, and the generator's a problem, has been a problem. Now we're talking the runner. We yank the whole thing out of there and put in a larger unit. You guys just aren't thinking ahead. That's already happened, but you have a skeleton bay there now. So as long as you have a skeleton bay, why don't you put a working unit in there? And we have fish-friendly design that's being designed right now. We're very close. Seems natural. And then you've got that, which we know passes the most fish, and we have corn collector to run in tandem. With those two items, you could probably pull the strings.
What's all the money you were saying?
There's the plum. There's the carrot.
I'm afraid if you sat next to me, I might.
What's that?
I might like beat on you.
But that's not going to happen without some. This is the sweet part. So just a thought. I have to make that request.
All right.
It's noted.
It's noted.
On the record. Seems to make sense.
With that said, we've got I've got one more Bonneville update, or not Bonneville, but Dave added a winter maintenance schedules for Washington Shore and Cascade Island outage. Dave? Yes.
Good idea.
Well, I don't have any. I asked.
No, he asked for an update. He wanted clarification about when Washington Shore was out and Cascades Island would be operating.
What the lab? Yeah. Just because of all the work going on, I was just trying to sit down and figure out, okay, this is going to be off, is this on, is this...
So Bonneville doesn't have their winter maintenance schedule yet, but Washington Shore goes out mid-November, and Cascades Island will remain in service with the exit open until normal winter maintenance season, at which point on December 1st it will go to orifice flow, and you will have both Washington Shore and Cascades Island out of service, but you will have B Branch and Powerhouse One collection channels running.
Write that fast.
B Branch.
Yeah, that was.
We will meet
FPP
criteria. We're meeting criteria on this. November, mid-November, Washington Shore goes out of service. Cascades Island does not go out of service until the 1st of December, as per normal FPP winter maintenance.
Okay, so everything's out on the Washington side then.
Right, but we will have everything running.
Everything on the Bradford side will be running. Bradford Island Ladder. So we're not getting any maintenance done the Bradford Island Ladder this
year? Correct. Because Bonneville does Washington side 1 year and then the Oregon side the other year.
Okay. Yeah, we missed the Oregon side last year, except for an inordinate amount of time spent on B-Branch. But A-Branch and the collection channel, which is probably
full of mud. Around too.
Hopefully by next winter we will have our phase two report, at which point we will have a clear idea of what we really need to focus on over there, and we'll be able to spend
sounds
the entire
like
winter.
Sounds like diffusers and mud. I mean, has there been a good survey of what kind of conditions we have in there?
That's part of the phase two report.
I mean, do we have that?
It will be finalized later on this winter, and we will have it for next winter. Phase one report was A and B Branch and the details of what those fishways had in them. Phase two is the condition and the proposed solution to the degrading condition.
This is answering the BIOP RPA to upgrade the Bradford Island side. So, okay, I don't think I've ever seen those reports.
Phase one, I believe,
is
posted on the web.
2005.
Yeah, maybe that's why I can't remember.
It's pretty old.
A long time ago. But as soon as we get phase two, it will also be posted
to
the web.
Natalie's PM.
Okay, so that I'm just concerned that we're not getting. We've got at least two diffusers that I know of. There's FG19, and then there's 3-6 that seems to be halfway open or closed right now. I don't know if it's supposed to be that way or not. But
6 is. It's been halfway open.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But 19 is not.
Yeah, 19 I know that one's.
Yeah, that's a tricky one right there. Just about four diffusers right there close. And we were intending, of course, to get in this past year, get in the collection channel for the first time. I don't even know how long since I've been there, at least.
Right.
We just did the ROV on that yesterday.
Okay.
The grading's all in place.
Okay.
It's old. It doesn't look
great. You're not seeing piles of debris sitting down in there?
There's a fair amount of debris. There's some of them that have sand piled up through the grading, so it's
right. Probably about half.
Is that blocked diffusers?
You want to grab a copy?
I'd have to have him old ones. Tell me, I'm assuming it's old ones, but
it's,
I don't know.
Not the 4-8.
No, I think
12. It's 19 through 20.
But there's still, the bottom of that thing is like that.
Right.
So some of those
pits are filled in.
Filling up with woody debris and sand.
Okay, we'll live along another year and hope that nothing breaks.
That leads us to Walla Walla's updates.
Okay, so I assume those are in the same order as the last agenda, even though...
3, 2, 1, 2,
okay.
2, 3, 4,
so the first
5,
one was just to mention that we still plan to start trucking. We'll start collection for trucking on the 17th, and the actual first truck will leave on the 18th. So that's all projects, including McNary. So all the other projects will just switch from barge to trucking. McNary will initiate the first transportation.
And McNary runs through end of September or
right.
October?
End of September.
Okay, and then the others through October?
Little only runs through the end of September, and then Little Goose and Lower Monumental run through the end of October.
Do you still have shed criteria?
Yeah, we have the fish passage plan here. We could actually dig that out, but I think we wrote that in last year. So.
Well, it was in previously. That was back in the Larry Bashman days.
Yeah, okay, so it's still
it's
in there.
It's basically on granite tiles, I think, about this point now. So.
Yeah, that's usually, I guess, based on my past experience at Little Goose, October, from mid-October on, you have that potential where you can get bombarded in some years, and, you know, to the point where the amount of small shad just dominates, and people spend and way too much time doing that, and so it delays ever getting trucks out on schedule and things like that. So that's largely what it's in. But
program. I don't think we have a shad transportation program.
Yeah, that's we don't. Right.
I think they're doing fine up there.
We don't.
So yeah, just along that same line, I did bring the numbers that we've been collecting at the various projects, and the numbers are quite low. You know, on the 5th of August, we had like 234 at Lower Granite, 1,420 at Little Goose, 208 at Lomo, and 4,900 at McNary. So McNary's dropping off, however. You know, we're on every other day there, and 2 days before that, it was 14,600, and 2 days before that, it was 40,000. So we're dropping off pretty fast at McNary. So I think that kind of does it. We did have a little bit of a look at temperatures early in the week at McNary as well. Just we had really hot weather over there, and we did have a couple days where we didn't have any wind, but then wind picked up day before yesterday. So we seem to be holding things, so we don't think we're going to have a problem with mortality.
What do you see in the temperatures, 69, 70?
We actually saw some as high as 74 to 76 in some gate wells.
Some of those gate wells.
Yeah, but the other low ones were 67 to 68. Okay. So Unit 4 was particularly high. Unit 4 was down for some ESBS cleaning one day, so we actually held that down until I think at least midnight that night before we turned it back on. But in general, we have enough flow to be running all the units, and we have, so 3 and 8 are out for the rewind, and then 14 is down, I think, for annual maintenance. Okay. So anyway, people were getting a little concerned when there was no wind for a couple days, but I was like, hopefully it's one of those 15-year occurrences, and luckily it did turn out to be one of those that it picked up, so good there. And then another issue that's coming up at McNary, the next item, SFE W2, so that's the south ladder entrances, the criteria. NIMS has been doing the inspections and sending those out and kind of asked for an update, I think, as to what might be the reason that we're not with low tailwaters meeting the criteria. And I don't know, Kenneth, did you want to give a description? But essentially what we have is the stilts in that one weir for like lamprey entrance.
Yeah, South Fishway entrance number two. Since about April, both South Fishway entrances haven't met the depth criteria of 9 feet. They've been between 8 and 9, usually midway. And but the peg differential on the entrance has been fine. It's been 1.3 feet. So then trying to maintain that first as a priority, and then as long as they get that, and then the depth kind of has to give way to meet the head. That's how we have the head lift. So they're thinking that the only difference between previous years has been the stilts.
The pumps are no pump issues?
Well, the idea when the stilts were put in was that we could make up the extra water by changing flood angle on the pumps.
Right. Or up the RPM.
And so they did, but the only problem is fish pump number two is out of service. It has a deep major overhaul, so we only got two pumps, and that's a 30% flood angle. That's the best they can do with getting water right now.
So it's a pump issue or it's a stilt issue?
It's mixed. If you didn't have the stilts in, we might be able to meet criteria better, just because the stilts were needing us to have the third pump on.
Yeah,
right.
That's the idea of putting stilts in. Came
okay.
Along
so the pump number two is high on the list right now. We have no funding identified from the standpoint of appropriations set aside to be able to do it in 13. I just asked day before yesterday.
We
do not. It is the fish pump two. The fish pump 2 and the Washington Shore stop logs are both very high priorities, but we do not currently have funding identified for 13. So
still out.
Yeah, so fish pump 2 is a little scary. I mean, we're running 1 and 3 hard the whole time. If anything happens, we don't have a backup.
All I'm saying is that we need criteria.
I could get it. I know right off the top of my head, I don't... Well, I might have it, actually. Give me a second here.
If you're not meeting the depth criteria for the entrance without having this fixed for the pumps, then you're not going to pick it. This is with the stilts in place. The stilts are the same height as the proposed area entrance modifications for Lamprey, so you're not going to be able to put the entrance in the engine, right?
Right.
So I see 170K fish pump number two needs journal bearings. I have that for 170K on a list. So that would be the number I'd throw out right now.
Okay. Yeah, except it's not that high, I don't think.
And that's a little lower than we're going to be doing slow-mo fish pumps, and I think we've got like 350 for those, so it's not a major overhaul. It's not, you know, so it may just be that this is all we need to do.
This whole thing's kind of a crazy idea anyway, because you don't change the head. The velocities are still 8 feet or more per second. It's above Lamprey. I mean, that the idea was just to see if it would work or not. She's done it. Let's look at it. But let's put the ladder back to normal.
And we did have an inquiry on Monday from Russ Kiefer about not getting good conversion rates on some of their adults and asking us what we had.
Don't touch it.
Okay.
We've dealt with what we're dealing with right now. Yes, if you look at FinSAC, you have problems. But if you look at sockeye counting throughout the whole basin, it's screwy as hell. You have more fish at Priest Rapids than you have at Bonneville.
Okay.
So
that's good. Okay, good.
But there's 150,000 less at McNair. Yeah. That makes sense.
And the problem with the snake, you have sometimes you have detection. You have a lot of sockeye using a lot more navlocks than we've seen previously. And
they do.
And you have pit tag counts. Like, you have first-time detection. So the sockeye are being very...
elusive.
Sneaky about how they get through projects. So
before
we go and zoom down the trail of tracking what the issues are, let's first take a good long look at the tag data and do that stuff. We're trying to head this off before this becomes a big issue before it needs to be. Let's first find out and dig a good lot of problems with the data before we say these things.
So you're doing that through FPAC or something? Or?
TAC is the one taking TAC. This is TAC's data.
Okay.
Trying to see our conversion rates and harvest rates on sockeye. That's their good.
Tag's got under control.
A lot of tagging with sockeye this year. So for some reason, first time detections at Bonneville. What's wrong with those fish? I don't know.
So those fish were destined for snake bite.
Not many because you couldn't get many. But all you care is from Bonneville to McNary. Their conversion to McNary was very high. So why would the sockeye be different if you tag a bunch of fish at Bonneville, tag them at Bonneville, and they make it just fine to McNary? Why would the snakebait fish be problematic? We haven't looked at how many are transported versus how many aren't. You can't look at 2008 because you didn't pit tag did over squat fish from the sockeye from 2008. So all you have is 10. We need to look at transport versus non-transported. So before we start ringing the klaxons, let's go take a good long look at the data. So, I'm just saying, I was a little irritated with Russ brings up TMT yesterday because it's a little premature right now. So.
No, I agree. I thought his concern was that the snake river sockeye were converting at a different rate than the other.
That was his concern that he brought up on Monday when he called. And I think initially he had got poked by his lead over there, not just on sockeye but on steelhead as well, but then they backed off and decided that was temperature, and then there was still some issues of sockeye.
So Tom, to follow the issue, where should we go?
I would say TAC. I mean, they're the ones matter. I mean, the problem is it's going to be trying to find some people to go through and look really hard to get that, and that's going to take some time.
Can you update us on the next step?
I just sent a bunch of stuff to FPAC because Stuart had sent me a bunch of stuff yesterday late, so I sent that out to FPAC. We're going to talk about this next week.
The short answer is yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm guessing we'll probably throw FPAC at FPC at it too, just because FPAC is starting pollution at fisheries, so they won't get to it.
I understand that's their
they're
on the hot seat. Tell them to plug their ears. Tell them the Chicken Little is out screaming right now. Let's make sure it's not before we start saying it is.
Yeah, no, you know, I, right.
Poor Russ.
Well, you know, I think he's just being way upstream there, concerned about what goes on downstream
this is
that,
number three for him,
that
so.
Affects, you know, the harvest that's going on, you know, temporally, whether or not you're inadvertently hitting Snake River fish. That seemed to be where he was coming from. So it's obviously a problem for them. And it's a problem for everybody here because, you know, those listed fish in the snake are costing a lot of money. So.
No, that's why I say I just want to know where to go and get the data to keep management informed. Should they
I can send
it?
You the pit tag data sheet. It only has 45,000 records in it. If you want that, I can
45,000, yeah. We could spend between now and the next meeting going through that.
Yeah, that's the one that Stuart sent me yesterday. Surprising if I have not had a lot
of less than GDAX.
Okay, so let's see. I don't know the closure on SFE2 update.
I was
going to
ask that too. What's the resolution?
I heard Gary making some comments. Are you making some recommendations for winter work window that
would
stilts be removed?
We need to meet the criteria. That was the idea when they went in that we would still meet criteria and whatnot.
Gary,
they're the cause.
Did you propose taking them out and see if we can meet criteria with them out? I think that's the first test. Take them out, see if you can meet criteria. Because if you can't meet criteria, then it's all the pump issue, and then the stilts may or may not be the issue. I would say let's figure out how much of an impact the stilts are.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just relying on what they're telling me, that it is the stilts or the pump, but the pump is out. So
well, weren't we in criteria stilts. before the stilts were put in?
Yeah, we were.
That tells you it's a stilts, right?
Yeah, because Fish Pump 2's been out for quite a while.
Yeah, I think you got a 16-inch, you said, or
16-inch
hole all the time. If you're,
oh, I'm sure it has
you're putting out more flow.
I would like to know how big of an impact it is. If it's not
adding an extra 16 inches to the opening of the entrance.
But I'm saying with two units and 16-inch, and it's not having that, how close can they make it? If they totally meet the criteria, fine. Then, yeah, it's a stilts issue, and then we're going to have to start figuring out how to get unit 2 taken care of if we want to put this in for lab room.
Oh, especially with 2 bit out.
Fish Pump 2 has been out for, I believe, 6 or 8 months. We've been, you know, I remember Carl Duggar running around really hot, actually trying to get some Washington legislators involved in his off time as to the issue of the criticalness, and we just haven't been able to put together the funds yet, although it's real high on Dave Coleman's list, the OPM,
Really?
We just haven't.
You don't have the funds to fix one of the three main fish pumps. Okay, we're going to need to address this next biop. We're going to have something in there that talks about O&M funding. This is crazy.
As far as the stilts, what about the thought of reducing the gap to 12 inches? Is that
Well, would it make the difference in meeting criteria? That's when it would be viable. So, I mean, that's the question that's going back. How do we get the ladder in criteria? So, if you can lower that and get it in criteria, you can bring that back as a recommendation.
If you got time to play around with that, with looking at that with in or out, which I don't think that's going
to matter. Can you modify the stilts to 12 inches fairly easily?
It's just tack welded on there.
It's called
so just take it out,
pack saw.
Put it to 12 and...
I think we went to 16, though, for Snake River Falls Chinook, the real broad ones going through there.
That is true. We were concerned about adults. Yeah, that's a good point.
Okay.
There were other concerns, so we have to consider all the concerns that went into this.
Maybe not.
Yeah.
Right.
So I guess what you need to do you're going to go back to the Lamprey subgroup there in Walla Walla is come back with whether or not you can meet it, you know, how much the stilts impact it. If you changed 4 inches, whether you thought you could meet it, and then these guys would still maybe have fall Chinook concerns. But, you know, I guess the other question is, aren't lamprey passed by the, you know, I mean, when and if timing of the need for this, too? I mean, I guess
they're still going
right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Typically, lamprey don't peak until the middle of July. It's
okay.
So they're still moving their way up river.
Okay, so another month or so.
I guess the question is, because the talk of the idea is put a very, very large box structure in front of this, which would exclude fall Chinook. So we might be done with, I don't know, the question is how important is it to keep running this experiment?
Yeah, I just don't see it as a very, very likely successful experiment in the first place, because if you haven't changed the velocities one bit, you still have the same head.
The original plan for the lab rate group for the monitoring was to have 2 years of monitoring. So this year, then repeat again next year. So if we had to take the silts out, it would have to be during the outage, during the annual winter
time. Understand that. All I'm saying is that once, as far as I'm concerned, it's a failed experiment from the point of maintaining the project, fish waves. So
that's the, you can take that back to the PM.
16 inches was, Trevor's right, that was established for, I think we talked about 12, and then we said, no, that's too small for adults to go back through there, because that is, you know, it's an actual orifice in the fish ladder. Entrance, exit.
It sounds like the Lamprey group would have to come up with the money to fix the fish pump if they want to do a second year. If we can't, if we can't stay in criteria.
Well, there's a way to getting that done.
Those go on Sarah Mountain. You guys are building that big barge mine up in Lower Grand. I think we can cut that out.
There it is.
All kinds of
go. There it is.
We're here to help.
Sounds good.
Scott, does that work for you?
Put that thing down for us.
So. Yeah.
I mean, I just think there was assumptions going into that, and let's make sure that anything that we do for the next year goes through all those assumptions, which include they'll fall back through the orifice, whether or not this thing has a snowball's chance of working anyway. Which the first year ought to be able to tell us something about that. If we don't see any benefit, why would you do it a second year?
So we've got the cameras down right now, and they're monitoring. They don't have any data yet. Probably next week they'll start getting some data.
Yeah, so just go through there and get it done. Let's
so we'll leave this for an update at the next meeting, maybe?
Yeah. Let's roll it.
Okay. Coffer cell work was completed on July 31st. Basically, they did it all in one day. On-site work, you know, took place during a lot closure. So we had coordinated that earlier. We were able to get them to work from inside the closed lock. Next item, Little Goose spillway weir removal.
And we'll follow up on that.
Yep.
Are they going to do an inspection this winter to find out why all the water went out of it? Because copper cell issue doesn't need to plug fix, so we'd have to deal with this again in 5 years?
You know, that would have been a question for somebody on the PDT, so I'm going to have that as a do out to answer that for you.
It makes sense. I read that in the plans. I think that this was a temporary fix, and they are.
So we have that for a due out for next?
Heavlin, I can answer that.
Okay, but you, are you suffice, or do you want us to double check?
I think it's in the plan, but I remember reading it. But,
okay.
But this is a temporary fix.
Yep.
And they're going to go ahead and think about working on a permanent fix.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
So they only needed the coffer dam for that one.
They needed, it was a right. They needed an outage to put the gravel in. You might remember the suggestion out of this group was, could you do it from the lock so that you didn't have to change spill and various other things? And so they did close the lock then for looks like at 6 in the morning, and they didn't reopen it till 4 in the afternoon.
So I got like one more update, and then we'll do this.
So
it's gonna.
Yeah, there's kind of a lot going on down there around those coffer cells. You probably remember that I think it was early last winter there was a barge that hit sill. So there's some navigation issues there until we go through another dredging operation, which is probably a year or so out. So we're starting to see things throughout the system of the snake that where there's buildup of material that's influencing navigation. Spillway weir was closed on Monday, and shortly after closure, then it was changed to the flat 30% spill. Yep. Ask a question.
Yeah, I got a question from Trevor, trying to stimulate my memory back to why we close it early like this. And the one reason that I can remember is it gives more flexibility to operate the spill or less flow.
I think it potentially started to affect adult passage as well when you get below flows in the river.
It does two things. By having us turn it either on and off, and make a wave go through the pool, and we can't stay within the lock. So it changes too dramatic. And so we went to the spot pattern. It also was starting to show that you're walking the boat. and we just have the GSW parts to do that. So that's what we're saying here. That's probably
okay. So being getting rid of that one skill day that has to have this, the 7K, you can adjust skill enough so you don't have to keep bringing a second unit on and off.
So really reducing that time, right? You're able to do, you have stops that you can just pass the right amount of skill. Before, we would have to wait for a unit on, and you'd have to pull down, then you'd stop, put it back up, and you put it back down, and put it back up. That's what it would interfere with everything you're doing in the river.
Yeah. So, Trevor, I think we're still getting the same amount of spill. Though,
yeah, right? Yeah, it spills right.
I mean, it's adjusted as the river changes.
Correct. Yeah. So we're getting to the point where we run the river pretty flat now, and we can't,
yeah,
because we have enough of the right settings to do it. Okay.
Thanks, Scott.
Okay, so if we move on, Ken, I think you were going to talk about Lower Granite, the update on the fish pump trash rack.
I guess I got to interject real quick. That just the wording on that is misleading on the 315, Little Goose spillway removal / spill change to flat 30% spill. The current spill is 30%. The spill operation was changed to a flat, a constant, 30% change to a constant 7 to 11 as identified in the FOB. I think that wording is a little.
Yes.
Spill change to flat, so spill 7 to 11.
Do you want me to repeat that to be clear?
Yeah.
Anybody? Is that confusing?
And 7 to 11 KCFS.
In the FOB, yeah. And as Scott has suggested, when the river gets down, it's hard to manage. All
you're supposed to 30%, a 1K change is a 3% change. And so it's really impossible to nail a 30%.
Yeah.
And so that's why we came up with these the settings are on the spillway.
Yeah.
And you're going to be plus or minus on the percentages just because you don't have a fine enough settings on the spillway.
So when the river gets down to 25.
It's 32.
Oh, is it 32?
Yeah. 32. I can read it for you.
That's okay. But
you
32,
this
then you're
this is Russ's favorite issue.
When you're running between 7 and 12.
Yes, it's approximately 7 and 11. So there's usually one, but it's actually incrementally. So now it's at approximately 11.2. Then it'll bump down. If river conditions continue to go back down, it'll be approximately 9-ish.
Okay.
And then if the river continues to decrease again, it'll drop down to about 7-ish. So there's three bands in there that you can optimize.
Yeah.
How often do you change that then?
In 2010, it was just, we held it at about 11 for a couple of days. And then because discharge inflows continued to recede, it was another couple days to then basically you just gimp along till the end of spill season. So you just gimp along till August 31st.
So you just, whenever you hit that band, you move to it.
Yeah, because they can't manage the pool.
Right.
It's either
okay.
Way.
Okay. It seemed to work.
It worked in the past fine.
Yeah.
We just did it last year. The snake had the robust runoff this year. The Columbia had the unbelievable run. Snakes are still okay.
Okay, go ahead. Ken, you want to go ahead with Lower Granite?
Lower Granite has been having some heat issues with their AWS pumps operating at the upper end of the normal range. It's still within criteria, but they've been concerned about it. It's been that way since from the end of May. It's kind of a lesser degree of a problem, and the heat's kind of gotten pumps kind of been exhibiting warmer temperatures. So where we are now, they've kind of been holding steady. So they've been trying to investigate, see what the cause is. And one thought was maybe the trash racks in front of the pumps were plugged with debris. So they never actually pulled the trash racks to investigate. So they did that last month. And they didn't see any debris, but you know, it could have fallen off when they pulled it out too. So that's kind of really hard to define if it was debris or not. And then the lower sections of the trash racks, they could not remove. So either they were stuck or that they weren't meant to be removed because they've never actually done this before. So it was inconclusive. So they still don't know what's causing the heat. They're going to look at the heat exchanger. It's like oil exchanger, so they expect that to be working fine. Probably not the problem. So another cause could be the lower tailwater head. The pumps got to work harder, has a greater head on the pump, so maybe it's kind of overworking. They've had this issue like every in the summer last couple of years, but it's been a little bit worse this year. But, so we're, that's about what I have that right now.
So we'll keep this on the agenda until you guys figure it out. Keep giving us updates so we know what's going on, and as you guys look at it over the winter.
I think that's appropriate because it actually sounds like it's another one of those things that we're potentially going to have an issue with.
So it's all three pumps?
Yeah, it is.
They're running two pumps at a time, I believe, and alternating them every 3 days or something like that, so they're alternating between the three, but whichever two pumps are running are having the issue. Yeah.
Is planning to go take a look at that lower track track as well, send an ROV down this winter or something like that?
That's under discussion. That would be an option.
So you can take that back. When you bring an update, you can update on...
Do you guys have ROV capability like we do, the big one? Because you can also get a hold of those guys and see if they'll...
Yeah, I saw where it's ROV. Yeah.
Okay. Because we've got that giant...
It's really big. I don't know.
The size of this table...
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's pretty big. So if you need that option, you may want to get a hold of Todd Manny. D. Todd Manny. All right, well, let's keep that on the agenda, and I'm going to move number four up because Bob Ford's here to give a presentation.
I got one more update on LOMO I was going to give. Oh. Sorry that I added today at the beginning of the meeting. Okay, sorry to be a little slow. Today, Lower Monumental wanted to deviate this afternoon from the existing spill pattern to be able to clear debris from the fish ladder exits. So they were going to do that this afternoon, just close bays 1 and 2 for the time it takes, probably somewhere around 4 hours. Just let people know. Okay.
The spill will be the same, though, just in
terms of the spill amount will be the same, yes. Sorry, not clear on that. Thanks.
So what do they do to clear the debris? They take the gates all the way open.
Okay.
All right. So ready to move. Thanks.
So moving Bob up, you know, we've always had this talk about NERC WEC compliance and what is it. So I asked him a couple of months ago if he could free up his schedule to come to one of these F-bombs and give us one. And here he is, Mr. Ford, live with his presentation.
My name is Bob Ford. I'm the Reliability Compliance Program Manager for the Portland District Corps of Engineers. And Vern asked me to come in and kind of tell you the whys, wheres, and give you a little history on the NERC reliability compliance standards. Background, I'm an electrical engineer, been with the Corps for 20 years, 17 of which I was in the bowels of the Dalles Dam as the electrical engineer. Been pretty much in all of the districts in the division. I was the temporary project OPM at Little Goose for 5 months while Ross went to Afghanistan or Iraq or wherever the hell he went. But anyway, so that's my background. You need to talk a little bit about the causes for the NERC standards. We had a major blackout August 14th, 2003 in the Northeast. The underlying...
Before you get going, can you say what NERC and WEC is?
Oh, NERC is the North American Reliability Compliance Corporation. FERC is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. That's the only governmental body in this whole bit. Everybody else is a contractor, except for us. So NERC is, like I said, the North American Reliability Compliance Corporation. WEC, who is our regional entity, is the Western Electric Reliability Council, and then there's the entities in the area. Anyway, the 2003 outage affected the area about 50 million people and 61 gigawatts, a little over 61 gigawatts of power in the states of Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania, New York, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, New Jersey, and the Canadian province of Ontario. So it was an international outage. Power wasn't fully restored for 4 days. It took 4 days to reconstruct the system and put everybody back online. Total cost for the outage was between $4 billion and $10 billion in the United States and about $2.3 billion in Canada. So we're talking a lot of bucks here. All started, you know, these outages, all it's a perfect storm type of thing. Three generators, Konesberg Unit 5 in Michigan, 1205, Greenwood, which is a nuke reactor, at 114, and then the East Lake 5, which is another gas fire turbine, in 131, all took sudden outages for various reasons. And in my research, I never could fit, nobody ever came up for a reason why these came down. Remember, this is about the same time that generating agencies had kind of started playing the system, and they would do their maintenance. They would do their maintenance on less peak hours. You know, we have peak hours and non-peak hours. It's very expensive during peak hours, not as expensive during non-peak hours. So they started doing their maintenance on non-peak hours and then have the generators ready for peak hours to maximize their profits. So I'm just kind of postulating on why these went down. It was transmission lines. We had some... four transmission lines. One went down with a brush fire. The Harding-Chamberlain line, it had been unstable for a couple of days, and it kept going down and coming up. The Hannah-Jupiter had vegetation contact. They didn't trim their trees. And Star-South Canton was also unstable.
But wasn't that caused because the generation went down, the lines overloaded, and they sagged and they shorted out?
Right. When you lose 300 megawatts somewhere, you got to pick it up somewhere else, and you overload already loaded transmission lines. Lines tend to get hot, they droop, they hit branches, and you get ground faults.
We did that in 96 at our
line. Yep. So the event cascaded to major portions of the Northwest U.S. and parts of Canada. And this is USA Today's headlines, blackout, misery. There's New York City. When was the last time you saw that few lights on in New York City? And then Toronto, Canada was almost totally black. So the root causes were, it was inadequate system understanding. And when I'm prefacing all this, I want to preface it with the fact that the NERC standards, the Power Act of 2005, was intended to correct these. So as I go through these later, I'm going to tell you about the NERC standards, and you're going to see that they are directly related to trying to fix some of these problem areas. Inadequate system understanding. The operators failed to assess and understand the inadequacies of the power system, and even to have systems online to evaluate the system. There was a situation in Michigan, Northern Michigan Power, where they had an outage of the system that evaluates the grid and tell them for failures, and they put it back on, but they didn't enable the updates to the system, so he was seeing stale data. Inadequate system awareness. The operators didn't understand the deteriorating conditions of the power systems. Some detection systems were offline at the time. Again, they weren't talking to each other. Michigan wasn't talking to Ohio. Ohio wasn't talking to New York. It started in Michigan and Ohio area and cascaded in. Inadequate tree trimming. You know, we had the problems with the trees hitting the lines causing ground faults. And inadequate real-time contingency diagnosis support. The last sentence is really big to me. In fact, one major provider, Northern Michigan Power, actually opened its line to isolate itself. It saw things going down. Instead of providing assistance to the system, it opened up its breakers and saved itself. So it saved the outage for its $2.3 million folks, but its extra spending reserve could have enabled operators to keep the system up. So, and I love relevant quotes. Our investigation leads to the conclusion that the electric reliability has been seriously compromised by fragmentation and ineffective regulation of the electric transmission system. And that's Michigan Public Service Commission. They're actually one of the ones that caused the outage. And then First Energy operators still seemed unsure exactly what was happening. I mean, when was the last time you actually had an operations analysis where the operator didn't know what the hell was going on. we're a major superpower. I love this one. We're a major superpower with a third world electrical grid. That was Governor of New Mexico, which I don't understand why he commented, because Mexico wasn't part of the grid.
Was that then, or was that later?
No, that was, this was actually in 2003. And if there had been more lines available at the time this event occurred, it's possible they could have absorbed the load and kept the failure from spreading. And that's the head of one of the vice presidents for the Electric Power Association. So, enter the Energy Act of 2005. Congress enacted this legislation in response to 2003 Northwest blackout. It calls for sweeping standards designed to make the bulk electric system more robust and reliable, and intended to be an industry partnership process, such so that the standards, any new standards or modifications of old standards, have to be voted on and get a 60% okay from the electric industry. What is the bulk electric system? The BES, you're going to hear that a lot. The bulk electric system. That's the everything that generates or carries electric power to and from the region. It's $1 trillion in asset value, more than 200 miles of transmission lines operated at 230 kV or higher, more than 950,000 megawatts of generating capability, and nearly 3,500 utility organizations working well over 100 million customers and 283 million people. NERC reliability standards deal with the generation and transmission assets that are connected to the bulk electric system, so the BES. So if I refer to the BES, I'm talking about the wires and the plugs and everything we deal with them as a daily. So here's the organization. Here's, and this has all of everything spelled out. FERC is the government entity, okay, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. And then it comes down to a contractor. FERC realized they couldn't do this themselves. So they hired a contractor, NERC, the North American Electrical Reliability Corporation. It's a private entity. NERC makes the rules, gets the rules happening, gets the votes going, but it's not until FERC agrees that they become law. Western Electric Coordinating Council is our regional entity, and basically they have all of the West Coast. And then, of course, there's UNWP, Seattle, Walla Walla, BPA, Bureau, PGE, and the private folks down at the bottom of the heap. And here's the connection. Here's the United States. You see that WEC takes the western provinces of Canada all the way USA, and then down in a little piece of Baja, Mexico as well. And then the eastern connect with the alphabet soup there.
So there must be a Canadian, besides FERC, there must be another Canadian oversight that the government moves that up.
There is. There is. It's a committee in Parliament in Canada. And this just shows that all of the five regions in districts in the Northwest Division of the Corps all have counterparts of myself. Okay, so here's the reliability standards. And as I'm talking about these, remember what happened. The miscommunication, the lack of adequate facilities, and everything that happened. So they're built in, you'll hear BAL, COM, CIP, and then the standards. So the resource of demand balancing, it sets the standards, procedures for balancing the load, including disturbance control, what to do with a disturbance, contingency reserve, how much you need to have, that spinning reserve that we always talk about, especially when you're talking about wind farms. Frequency response and automatic generation control. Communication, COM, ensures that all players are talking to each other and what the tools they have to talk with each other, and those tools are online. Critical infrastructure protection, that's the big one. It's huge. Any of you that work at a project in the Portland, Walla Walla, Seattle district, you try to get on to one of the big girls on the Columbia, you're going to go through this because you have to have a background check. You have to have that SIP training that you have to go through. You have to, you have to get your badge. So one of the things we did is, in response to this, is in the Portland district, we locked up those powerhouses. Sets down standards for protection of physical and logical access to
Brian,
cyber assets.
Has joined the conference.
Hey, how you doing, Brian?
Hey, how's it going?
I'm good. Anyway, so we go through an analysis and we determine whether an asset, generation asset, is what we call critical to the BES. And if we determine it's critical to the BES, then we set these standards. What's that?
Who needs to go through SIP training?
Anybody that requires unescorted access, physical access, to Chief Joe, the Dalles, Bonneville, John Day, McNary. Well, Walla Walla has gone out and said that they don't have any critical assets. So that's...
Oh, that's interesting. So taking those dams out is not a problem.
Now remember. I always have this problem when I talk about critical assets. I'm only talking about assets that are critical to the BES. There's other missions that those dams have that are critical. In fact, Eric Peterson just comes off his chair in the Willamette Valley when I tell him that there's no SIP in the valley because he doesn't have any critical cyber assets.
They're going to ask a question, Gary, Trevor, Dave. Have you guys gone through SIP?
Yep.
Yep. Yeah, it's really easy. I mean, it's a 10. I don't even look at the. I don't even. You look at the thing once, the presentation once, and you just answer the questions. There's 10 questions you answer. You get 70%. You know, 7 out of 10, and you're good for another.
You're going to have to do it. This wouldn't be familiar, but it makes a difference.
So, anyway, with this said, I want to go down a rabbit hole. The Corps of Engineers. And the Department of the Army, the whole mitigation thing as far as whether we can be fined is kind of in limbo, because the head of NERC and NERC last week ruled that we were eligible to be fined. Mm-hmm. And we come back and say, no, there's a thing in, there's a term called sovereign immunity, which says that one agency can't affect the budget of another agency, that says that unless you specifically, Congress, if Congress has to specifically say that Department of the Army has to be, you know, can be fined, we're not recognizing them. So what the Department of the Army and the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Civil Works and the head of NERC, FERC, about 4 or 5 years ago, came to an understanding that they were going to agree to disagree, and but that the Corps and the Army was going to voluntarily comply with all of these to the best of our budget manpower, and that's where it stands here. FERC just came out again as an entire body came back in support of the head of FERC's decision 5 years ago that yes, we are. Okay, and so the lawyers, we have 30 days to comply to that. So reply to that. So the lawyers in the Northwest Division are all looking, trying to figure out what's going on. But in my mind, it's going to take the Department of Justice to come in and weigh in on it. Either Congress to come out with a waiver of sovereign immunity, or DOJ to come back and say, you know, ladies, be nice to each other, or men, gentlemen, be nice to each other. So anyway, that's where we stand. It falls for BPA and the Bureau are in the same boat, except that the Bureau and BPA say, yes, we are part of the bulk electric system, and we are generator owner operators, transmitter owner operators. The Corps says, we ain't part of your system, you can't fine us, but we're going to do this voluntarily just because we're good guys. Okay.
Sounds familiar.
So that's all I know about the legal stuff. So, but my direction is to follow the rules as best I can, make my reports, file my violation reports. When we have a violation of standards, you raise your hand. It's really weird, and it took me a while to make Office of Counsel understand that it's like if you came in. I live in the Dalles, and coming into Portland, if I drove 70 miles an hour instead of 65 on I-84. When I got to Portland, I would pull into the CHP off the OSP office and say, look guys, I was going 5 miles an hour over the speed limit the whole way in here, so cuff me and take me away. That's what we're expected to do, and that's what we do. So emergency preparedness, emergency operations planning, duh. Preparation for load shedding plans. When we get into problems, who do we shut off first? Disturbance reporting. We have those. For instance, the Dalles blackout last year. We did a big EOP5 report. Went to Salt Lake City and talked to WEC. Asked us why we did it, what happened, and what we were going to do to make sure it doesn't happen again. System restoration plans. Black start. You know, who's black start? What are our obligations during black start? Who's in control of black start? How it's going to happen? And loss of control centers, if BPA loses Monroe or Dittmer, what do we do?
Are we going to cover how often we have to do black start testing?
Black start testing is required every 3 years. The core, we're doing it yearly because we find out that if we do something every 3 years, we forget how to do it. So if we do it annually, then we know how to do it, and we don't have to reinvent the wheel every 3 years.
Who do you coordinate this group?
We coordinate with BPA, Jim Burns, okay. And BPA Power.
The reason I bring it up is we had concerns in this group as to when it occurs. Right. So we didn't know how to get it.
It has changed. And the latest EOP5 that came out said that we have to actually energize the bus now. Before, we just fired up. We would just fire up our station service units and verify that we could provide power to the Black Star units, okay, and that's it. Well, with the new regulation, now we have to actually close into that bus for BPA, which is a big thing now because now we have to negotiate a line outage, and we're close in the Portland district. We still have to get that line outage for John Day. But we've done the line outage for the Dalles. We've done the line outage for Bonneville. And that's a little tough.
There's fish impacts associated with that, right. So that's why we wanted to loop it back is to try to get in the schedule what's best for us.
There are.
Fish ops.
Right.
Can you explain a little bit more black star just going from nothing to getting started back up?
We lose the power. We did 96. Oops. And basically we lost. Everybody went down. We had a very hot day. We had a high spill, mandatory spill. 60% of the river is being spilled. We had 40% of the river left. And real hot day, BPA called and said, hey, we're having trouble with our voltage support. Can you give us some more?
And on my desk, I tried to call Chris Ross. Chris didn't answer the phone. Bullshit.
Yeah, so basically voltage got low. When you don't have enough, when you have a lot of load and not a lot of power, basically what droops is frequency and voltage. When voltage drops to the, you know, 105, 106 instead of 115, you start losing relay. Relays that are designed to protect the generators start dropping off. And that's what happened. We lost McNary, we lost John Day, we lost the Dalles, and at that point, BPA just lost the system, so everything went black. Nobody had power unless you had your own generator. So what a restoration plan does is you can't just bring it all up at the same time because you don't have enough generation. There's all kinds of inrush load that you have to deal with. So what BPA does is the restoration plan spells out little islands. They basically generate little islands. They'll generate a little island around all the Black Star plants. There's a Black Star plant at the Dalles, for instance. So they will build an island of generation and load around the Dalles. They'll build one around John Day, build one around Bonneville, Chief Joe, Cooley, Libby, and then once they get all these up, then they'll start connecting them to each other. And so that's what the restoration plan does. It's a way to get us from dark to light. Facilities, some of the analysis of the 2003 blackout was people didn't even know what the capability of their facility was. Didn't know how much they could put on. If they had a facility rating plan, it was old. They'd either upgraded generators or had failures and downgraded generators. So this says that they'll have a facilities plan. They'll also have a vegetation control. They'll trim those trees. They'll have a vegetation control plan. Interchange scheduling coordination deals with coordination communication between regional energy power system identities. Okay, so the folks at PGE are going to talk to Bonneville, they're going to talk to Southern California Edison, they're mandated to talk. Interconnection reliability, same thing. The agencies have to get together and plan what to do in case of an emergency. Hey, I've got an extra 500 megawatts that I can give you an emergency. That's great. They'll use that. Modeling MOD analysis provides requirements for documentation modeling of forecasting of DES assets. Those models, BPA and WEC, have a model of every generator in their area. And what they do is they play what-if games on the computer and say, okay, if I lose this, what happens? If I lose this, what happens? And that way they can prepare, and it's kind of a war game situation. Well, this says that every unit will be modeled in a baseline, and then every 5 years they'll do an update to that model. Well, that affects environmental in that I wanted to do a bunch of modeling tests in the valley, and I couldn't because low flows, we had to have certain flows for a fish habitat, we had to have this and this. So it was a wake-up call for me this year that I need to do my coordination with y'all folks to make it happen. Nuke, we don't have any nukes, but there's coordination between nuclear generator operators and transmission utilities. Personnel performance training, the level of training that the operators have. They found that, you know, some operators really didn't know how to operate the board in front of them. So there was training requirements that they needed to go through. PRC, it's testing and maintenance of the circuit breakers, relays, things that make up the DES. TOP, this is the big one. This involves the Black Start stuff. And the operation coordination requirements for transmission system operators, the 72 hour outage fiasco that we went through earlier in the year was all out of TOP5, and it said that hey, you have to have a really great reason to take a generator out in less than 72 hours. So that there was some issues that we had to deal with through that.
Has that been resolved yet, though?
Yeah, it has. You know, it's really a... In the good old days, we at the projects would call, and I've done it. You know, I want to take Unit 5 down. I want to look at it. I want to do something with it. So I get an outage. I say, hey, I'm here today. Can we take it down? You got three units that are standing idle. And they say, yeah, I don't know. But they call the dispatcher and they say, hey, I'd like to take this down. The dispatcher would say, well, yeah, okay. Okay, fine. How long you need it? And that was good and bad. It was real good for the projects. It was bad for scheduling because, you know, there was flux there. And dispatchers really don't like flux. They like to know what's there all the time. So there was a terminology thing. Then this came in, 72 hours. And it didn't take more than one instance at John Day when we wanted to pull the fish screen out. It was time to pull the fish screen out. We had to shut the unit down in order to pull the fish screen out. And basically, the John Day operator used the wrong terminology. Okay, if he just said it was fish related, okay, it was a fish emergency, it's fish related, we wouldn't have had any problems. But they didn't know the rules, and they said, hey, I want to take this out. And the dispatcher said, no. So, oh my God, I got like 3 days. The fish plant says, I had these out in 3 days, and you know, when am I going to get it out now? Don't have time. And so, Dennis Stocks, God love him, called back the next day and said, hey, I got to get this out. It's a fish emergency. We got to make the deadline, yada, yada, yada. And they said, fine. So, haven't heard any situations yet. It's, you know, one of the things that we're dealing with in the JOC, we have a reliability, implementation, and technical subcommittee. Look, if we're on the snake, and I know from experience that half the units on the snake don't run 6 months of the year, okay? That whatever units are farthest away from the fish ladder just don't run because there isn't enough water except during the spring freshen. So, if you want to take Unit 3 out and you got Unit 4, those should be interchangeable. We should be able to take Unit 4 out. We should be able to take Unit 4 out. Unit 5, Unit 6 at Little Goose, and not have a 72-hour window because they're not going to run anyway. So those are the things we're trying to work out. Transmission planning, same thing. You know,
So, Bob, yes. When you do that kind of work, I hope you're aware that there's turbine unit priorities at all the dams for fish,
mm-hmm.
and you look at that. And
yeah, what we're trying to get through is, you know, the first place we look, you know, we've been beat up enough in operations on the Columbia that first thing we look is environmental, okay? And we get it past the fish folks, and then we go into dispatch. But what we want to try to get out of is BPA telling us, no, you can't have it.
And this is what's precipitated us explaining what the unit priority really means.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean is there more important than other ones? And so we need to maybe be a little more specific than we have been in the past because of this this issue. We now call them four stops to clean the screen instead of three-day scheduling instead of time.
Yep.
But it's something that some units are more important than others.
Mm-hmm.
We need to work around those.
Absolutely. Getting that flow closer to the fish ladder is essential in some areas. And then voltage and reactive, saying that we will comply with the voltage schedules that BPA puts for us. Say, hey, we want your voltage out of this generator to be, you know, 13.8 all the time or whatever. Possible inputs to FPOM project access. You know, SIP restricts physical access to those individuals that have verified need training and identification verification. It's a little different because of the culture and the design of the powerhouses in Seattle and Walla Walla, but in Portland, unless you have the training, the background, and the need, you don't even get in the powerhouse. In Walla Walla and Portland, they have islands. You know, you can get in the powerhouse, but you can't get in around. You can't get inside the main unit cabinet. You can't get in the control room. You know, they have those islands. Same with Seattle. System biop operations and planning. EOP sets definite procedures for system restoration, emergency operations, and load shedding. The IRO standards set down requirements and procedures for advanced date and current day operations of the BES. There's that acronym again. MOD requires model validation testing of generation units without proper planning. I found out this year, may be in conflict with seasonal passage criteria. And then TOP sets requirements for outage coordination. Well, the bottom line is the NERC standards add yet another authority into the mix of agencies that determine the operating characteristics of federal and private generation assets in the Northwest. So there's another player. But you see that the bottom line is I wanted to show that, you know, the NERC standards didn't arise for no reason. They took the analysis of that 2003 event and said, you know, how can we make the system better, and came up with these standards. So I'm open to questions if anybody has any questions.
Well, part of the reason that this question came up is that at Bonneville Second Powerhouse, we've been limiting the operating range of the units to smaller than outlined in the BIOS. And so the question was, is that legal? Or how do we have to characterize it as a way to make it meet the standards?
It's definitely legal. It's you know, you need to work out with the operations folks. You want to, is it the upper part or the middle part or the bottom part? You want to get within that. You want to get less granular than the 1%.
Right.
So you want to
narrow it.
Yeah.
Some of the concern that we were having is we want to be able to access for emergencies, and that's where something we have to kind of talk over when you can and can't use it. And
right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, you're not going to get any heat from NERC on that. But if I was an operations superintendent and, you know, we're working in our 1% criteria and you want to narrow that to less than 1%, then that's wear and tear on the working part. Governor's got to make more adjustments to keep within that 1%. GDACS doesn't care. In fact, from what I hear, in the next version of GDACS, the ability to go there is going to be coded in. And then it's just going to be negotiated with the projects or the districts as to whether it goes there. But, you know, I just see it as more adjustments. You're going to hear about overheated governor oil. You're going to hear about worn governor parts. You're going to hear about all that stuff.
Well, another question. I'm just curious. How is the wind energy fitting into this, and what is the impact?
Wind is the bane of my existence.
I wouldn't bother that at all.
What we have, the biggest problem that wind poses to the region is that Wind is absolutely a wonderful thing, but it only works when the wind's actually blowing. Okay, in the Dalles.
Your quotes.
Yeah, there was another couple of quotes in there. The other one was "In God We Trust, All Others We Virus Scan." But understand that for every megawatt of power that's generated in wind, there has to be an additional megawatt that's in spinning reserve, backed up by hydros. Okay, so at any one time at the Dalles Dam, we could have 14 units running at minimum 1% criteria, because we need that 30 megawatts a unit to cover the wind generators on the hill. So, and that kind of gripes us, because right now with the current BPA agreements, they don't pay for that spinning reserve. That's not an ancillary service that they pay for. And so PPA, in my mind, took a really great step out, but got severely beaten up by FERC when they told the wind generators last year, we don't want you generating, because we got a grunch of water that we got to pass through the dams, and we don't want to spill it. And well, you know, BPA was in a tough spot, because you guys were telling them you can't spill any more than this, and then they were limited to, because there was so much wind, they didn't have any power. I mean, they didn't have any load for the power that they needed to generate. So they told the wind generators basically take a vacation. And so they contested to FERC, and FERC came down and said, BPA, you can't do that. So they're kind of between a rock and a hard place. But yeah, my problem with wind is that they just put a lot of strain on generators. Because, you know, a hydro generator, it wants to run at maximum. It wants to be at, you know, 100% of its possible of its highest maximum, because that's when there's the most cooling, that's when there's the most efficiency, that, you know, and wind is making us run less than that, so it's just causing more maintenance and more headache. But wind's great. I don't own any, so I'm not for them. I remember, I come from Southern California, and the Palm Springs area was, if you've ever been to Palm Springs, you see all of those guys on the San Jacinto hills there. Anyway, any questions?
Any other questions? Well, thanks for taking
Thanks for the opportunity, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. So now we can jump right back in the agenda to research updates. And we've got a couple. John, you have?
Hey, Brian's on the phone.
Is Brian on, doing his tribal lamprey?
As much as he enjoys these meetings, I'm going to be nice to him and tell him he's going to buy me a beer later for this. So.
I think he called in.
He is. So I'm saying, do you want to deal with an issue?
Yeah,
so
sure.
To sit through another.
No.
He's next.
He's up. He's up right now. Brian, you live?
I'm here.
All right. You want to give your update?
Yeah, so I just wanted to provide a quick update on the collection, lamprey collection. Tribal lamprey collections, and I'm just going to be based off of Excel worksheet that Darren Jackson sent out in mid-July, July 26th. And both Yakima and Umatilla have been actively collecting lamprey since the middle of May, it looks like. Umatilla has collected a total of 442 lamprey. They're currently collecting fish for Nez Perce now, because they've reached their allocation. According to the tribal guidelines, each tribe gets about can collect about 379 lamprey. So Umatilla has collected their 379, and they're now collecting and holding fish for Nez Perce. According to Yakima, they've collected about 250 fish, and I think those are being stored or held on their holding facility. So let's see here. That's about all I got. We just wanted to kind of give a quick update on how many fish have been collected, and I think the collection has been pretty consistent this year. But I think there's some fish to be collected. They haven't had any problems reaching their allocation, tribal allocation.
Brian, this is Tom Flores. How much longer are they planning to continue chopping? Do you happen to have an idea on that?
Well, I think Umatilla will trap throughout the season for Nez Perce.
Okay.
I think Nez Perce, they'd like to get their allocation, kind of rely on Umatilla to do the trapping and holding for them. And I would guess that Yakima wants to do the same. So I would say, definitely through August and September, depending on the run. If it starts petering out, it may not be as cost efficient to go down there and get those fish. So, if there's fish to be had and they haven't reached their allocation, I would guess they would continue collecting.
Yeah, Brian, I was just asking. I couldn't remember if we actually had a date where they would, like, we trapped till September 30th. I don't know if we had any dates in there, and I couldn't remember. Or just trap until they meet their quotas?
Yeah, but I think usually they're kind of tapering down in September. So, and I don't think they've collected fish past the end of September in the last couple of years. But I'm not 100% sure about that.
Are these all from the Dalles?
It's spread out between Bonneville, the Dalles, and John Day.
I posted that spreadsheet that Aaron sends out to our website.
Are there any inquiries collected up in Willamette?
Not for translocation. I mean, that's all harvest, personal use harvest.
Why aren't they doing any translocation? Spreading them up to San Diego and other places? Has that been talked about?
That hasn't really been talked about. So that would be, warm springs might be more involved with that. They're currently not using translocation as a management strategy. So I don't know too much about that.
Okay.
I don't think it's really been discussed, the idea. And I think probably because they feel like there's fish are making their way up there. There's more fish in our planet than at Bonneville.
Any questions?
And we can do update Aaron's spreadsheet with the Yakima information and provide that to Tammy, and so then everybody can kind of know when and where fish have been collected.
That'd be great. Thanks, Brian.
Any other questions for Brian? Okay, let's move on. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Any research updates from the researchers here?
Everybody's well aware that we're moving forward with a testing and gate well turbulence reduction device at Bonneville. Unit 14, installation scheduled between March 4th and 20th. One addition to that, since our last meeting, we're looking at using FY12 funds to install a McNary-style orifice light ring, which is an important component in the orifice improvements program for inspection capability. We're going to modify the McNary light, keep the inside diameter at around 12 5/8 inches, the same size as the Bonneville orifice, and try to remove some of the internal light components to get one light ring rather than three. And PNNL thinks that we can reduce the profile into the gate well from 2.5 inches at the base down to 1 inch by modifying the acrylic lens, and it would be installed with the McNary style track as well, so we could remove it if we needed to and monitor it. And the installation of the track is very rapid, which is highly desirable for that time of year during installation. So just wanted to give an update on that.
That was one?
One test light to go with the gate well turbulence reduction device testing.
Sean, you got anything?
No.
All right. RCC update. Got some flows?
You're alrighty.
Caught you.
What's that?
You guys are information sharing when you're supposed to be sharing broadly.
It's just taking things.
She was supposed to be blocker, so don't blame me. I had it queued up for you.
So currently at Lower Granite,
lows of 29.1. That's yesterday's day average. And then 5 days out, the forecast is flows will increase slightly to 30.0. And then 10 days out on August 18th, down just a little bit to 29.4.
It's a pretty flat.
Yeah, it's pretty much maintaining. McNary currently flows of 222.2, 5 days out on August 13th, down to 207, and 10 days out, down to 189. And at Bonneville, currently flows of 207.0, 5 days out, forecast of 206.3, and 10 days out, forecast of 194.6, and that's on the 18th of August.
Two minor questions.
Mm-hmm.
One is the more interesting one, the second one is just more of a smart ass. Brownlee, operation, I know, shocking there. from the sticker, do you guys have any ideas or that of what the Brownlee complex is going to do, or are you guys just kind of taking that as it comes? Because I know for temperature modeling and that kind of stuff, that's kind of come up as they are kind of the big unknown and the hardest variable to estimate for what we should do at the workshop. Do they point to you guys at all, or?
No, at Walla Walla does their best to get as much insight as possible and guide those operations there, but they've really largely been successful at getting a good idea of what's going to be coming out.
I guess so. That. I didn't know if they were playing nice with you guys or not.
Nice in that they're being silent.
Yeah, trees. Sounds golden.
Yeah, sometimes.
And that, another one of your questions.
How would you be responsible under the, I don't know, the biological
You want to ask Noah that question, why Brownlee somehow, how the Hell's Canyon complex is not required
to be a tree in Canada.
Hey, do you want to get Richie down here and have Richie explain that? Why Idaho's a tough negotiator.
Negotiator.
Promoted, so.
We need a tree.
Politics.
Negotiators.
I know, well, Idaho is kind of a tough country, so.
Do whatever they want to do.
But they aren't isolated like Texas is in the grid. You notice that?
Oh, yeah.
That was cool. Yeah. I saw that. Texas is right there.
We're our own country.
Yeah,
most right. Are.
Yeah.
No, I think we're getting ready for them to succeed. Oh. We're hoping they're going to. It's our master plan. We're cutting them off.
And then, there's a ton of history behind it, and there's market sensitivity as well. They don't give us their plant operation. So,
yeah.
They've asked for a lot, and it's been denied a lot.
Yeah, no, I just was wondering, Brownlee, for temperature modeling, if they like said, hey, it looks like we're going to just, if they give you guys any general stuff, okay, they don't do that. So we're just all going to be playing in the dark. And then my more interesting question is, how in God's green earth do you have 222 at McNary and 207 at Bonneville? Are you like, are you guys pooling water somewhere more than there?
That's a good question. Actually, double check.
Leakage.
Losing stream.
Thirsty people along the way.
The system.
I heard that one too, but you know, separate.
There's a balance of shares.
That's
a smart ass remark. So you're pulling a John Deere.
Reservoir filled
John
Deere River.
Yeah.
We're moving out the other direction.
You're pumping it up the river. Pretty more cool. Kind of have plants in there for that.
Irrigation. So,
Bert, your lawn must be green as hell right now, I guess.
It is very green.
Yeah,
let's move on.
Yes.
Let's move on. Any other comments from...
Move.
All right. Avian hazing. So there's some potential of getting a lethal take for gulls in Walla Walla. I know that's Ken's...
Yeah, yep. Ken's going to cover it, but I think we haven't ever gotten from Portland whether or not you want to be included on that. We've had some comments from the project, and I think Ken was directed to either Mike Langsley or yourself and hasn't been able to get a box checked.
He called and left me a message, and I haven't been able to talk to him about it.
Okay, so...
And I want to talk with Paul Schmidt and others first, but okay. I mean, yeah, if we can get it, then I'd like to have it.
Should be.
Well, there seemed to have been, I guess just before we get into the topic, back in 2005, the last time that this was revisited, there seems to have been kind of a political nature to the final alternative that was selected, because all of the information in their BA was leading to, yes, lethal take is a good idea in limited amounts, and you should do it. And then suddenly this alternative that was not mainstream throughout the document became the chosen alternative, which was don't do lethal take. So anyway, that said, we think that it will help us to be more effective, and it will also help us from a cost-effective standpoint if it will be effective because of the fact of what we saw at the mirror.
It helps you be effective. Yes, it does. And there were some issues with Wildlife Services or APHIS or whoever they were at the time, and a little overzealous.
Great shot.
Yeah, he was a good shot. Yeah, whatever flew by.
Back in the day?
Yeah, back in the day, and okay. That kind of caused the recoil by the service.
Okay, so that's good background.
Hopefully we're all moved on, and other
right.
people
hey, Fred, you want to try it?
Here yeah, this is fun. Swallows.
Yeah. So I think the region supports this, and I mean, I know we do at the district, but I need to talk with those people that are responsible for it, Smith and
yeah,
Schmidt.
Sure. So before, we'll let Ken go, but you'll just follow back up either through FPOM or directly with him as to whether you guys want to be part of it somewhere. And I think we're looking to kick off at the start of the next FY another environmental assessment for this process to make the request. And so we'd need to know then whether you're on board. So before the end of the, before the start of the new FY.
Well, first of all, we need to backtrack and find out what's been done already with that BA that was written.
Yep. Whether
so
it,
can
it
you
may
just
be,
resubmit that?
It may be that that could happen as well.
Okay.
Yeah, our environmental compliance folks are kind of looking at, they'll be looking into that start of the fiscal year in October to see where we're going to go from there, see if we can maybe adopt that EA from 05 that Portland Water Law District did. There's also the EA that APHIS did, Wildlife Services, they did that last year, and that does recommend the current, what they're doing right now, which is limited lethal, the augment, regular hazing. So possibility we could adopt that one and have a funding on that. So we're kind of up in the air, but the idea is to at least look at what we're going to need as far as environmental compliance and see if we could get it in place for next season, get that all done. Because so our project bios have expressed an interest to have limited lethal for several years. You know, they think it's effective when used properly with the hazing. And definitely gives a message to the problem birds. So I spoke with APHIS and about the permitting, you know, the Section 10 permitting for that they get from the Fish and Wildlife Service for a number of birds they can take. And I know they were saying that, you know, in the past it was a lot more what they were permitted to take, and now it's quite a bit less. So I think that would alleviate some of the problem that you mentioned, you know, with the overzealous.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that was multiple species that weren't supposed to be shot. It wasn't just ringbill gulls or California gulls, so that was kind of over the top. But,
so I guess the real question is this, you write these up, then you're still going to have to interact with the service. Is it reasonable to think that by the time you get your document done that the service is going to be able to come back with any response for the following year?
It's not my department, but it's not a short turnaround. Okay.
It takes several months to turn that around. Right. I heard from Michelle McDowell Monday about that.
Okay.
So we're talking maybe 6 months turnaround time or more.
So it would be better if we could go with the existing, if
right.
possible, if everybody
so
can
yeah,
just
I mean,
get behind it.
We're on board, but I just need to talk to our environmental people. But
yep.
As far as FPOM concerns, we want to get it.
Yeah, and I think that has to be an FPOM decision.
I'm doing the conference.
You know, I mean, that's this group needs to,
right.
I think, on a monthly basis and have some discussion about avian predation just to make sure that we're in control of what's going on. So the project bios want it. FPOM should decide whether or not that's something that we want to see done.
Decide right now?
And I agree. It is.
Anybody have an issue with us moving out on this?
how much we use it is open.
Right, well, that's going to be part of the EA.
Well, what's the metric of quantification? I mean, is it, so is it number of birds by project? And, like, I mean, well, I mean, how many are we talking here? How many goals could you whack in a fish passage?
I think
season?
That depends on what's going on out there and how many,
half
how effective.
Of them,
the
of them,
idea is to maintain effectiveness of the, no, absolutely not. I mean, it's, there's wires, there's hazing to support the wires, and there's some lethal takes to support hazing. So that's the way it's, the hierarchy, the way I look at it. And if the hazing is going fine, you don't take anything.
Yeah. Right.
But if the hazing, you know, is not being effective, then you may have to take a goal or two to get, you know, back in control of the thing. So
you have to define what control means.
Yeah. Well, and that's the definition of effective hazing. I don't know exactly what that means other than keeping birds off the pitch.
There'll always be birds taking fish. So is it one bird or 1,000 birds? Or, you know, there needs to be some guideline.
Yeah, they got to be able to track it somehow. I mean, I just think any regulatory agency would ask that of anybody.
You have to keep bird predation rates or exactly.
I don't know if we have a database on past, if we actually recorded.
Yeah, and I'm kind of wondering, it seems like back when the last time that I saw some of that data presented, and I may be outdated, but the bulk of the change in our survival rates took place in low flow years versus high flow years, and the real benefit of having a lot of control over avian predation, it was pretty hard to see any quantified effect in our survival testing in a high flow year. So I guess I'm a little concerned about the blanket effect over all years if it's not really going to influence our numbers, because there is a cost associated with it.
Okay. I mean,
just something for discussion.
The definition.
It's in there that there needs to be adequate hazing.
Effective hazing.
Yeah. It's also in there that we need to meet performance standards. Right. If we're meeting performance standards, then we may have adequate hazing. That would be what,
could
how
you make
I would
that your baseline
that
for your bird numbers? I think we talked about that once before, having that as a kind of a set baseline based on the number. As long as you can maintain that number of birds or less and you made performance standards, it would seem like that was effective.
That's a
and if
possible
it goes above
route
that,
to,
then
to
you
justify
might have
it.
To,
yeah.
No, I think this is one of those that I would have to. I think this needs a separate group to talk about this one and go through it, because
you might want to base it low, and then you might want to base it on where the birds are.
Well, transport matters. There's a whole lot of things that feed into this, and you know how many fish are in the river.
Right, and I think we can get
just a matter of how many gulls are out there. I mean, relative to what was there when you did the performance standards. But I mean, that's. The biop says, again, I mean, it does say effective hazing. And it doesn't say if you meet standards, then you can back off or you can, you know.
Yeah, but if we meet the standards, then maybe just the bird wires is effective hazing, I guess, is my question.
If you had hazing, active hazing going on while the standards were being implemented,
right,
then you maintain that.
Right.
And as things get worse out there, you know, that's going to be something that may need.
Right, so set that aside. We do want to pursue the lethal take as an option.
Absolutely,
and we'll come up with a plan, our hazing plan, as we do every year, and try to get it to the level that's acceptable for us to deal with.
Well, that's going to
monetarily
decided,
and also
through the
regionally
O&M process.
Right.
So we need to have a separate group for that, I think.
That's
been kind of, Nathan's been working on some, you know, methods to standardize the quantification of gull activity out there, but that has to be tied to, you know, what you guys are saying. Well, we'd like to cut back on the amount of the cost, and now we're saying you got to maintain whatever's going on out there when you measure the standards at least.
Right.
And so, you know, all those things have to be, and it isn't just as easy as that. I mean, it's just a dialed in equation, X birds equals X survival. You know, so that's, there has to be some thought given as to how effective these birds are year to year. You may measure your performance standards in two wonderful years and then you have a bad year. You may need to put the pressure on avian a little harder on some of those years. So that's open for discussion, but nothing's frozen in time.
So Fish Field Unit did some observations a few years back, well, 2 years ago, and 3 years ago, and they had some estimates on what was being taken. Can that be factored into the performance standard and say, you know, we can afford to lose this many fish and still maintain the performance standard?
Yeah, that's pretty tough. percentage of the population versus the numbers of fish. Absolute. That's those are two different things.
To kind of take a model, and it's almost like, you know, there was that little mini model.
Effects. I mean, there's all kinds of issues here. This isn't something we're going to decide in the next 5 minutes or the next 3 hours. So,
further discussion.
And also, I'll have Nathan come in and give, he's given a presentation at the district this end of the month, so I'll have him come in next September if he's ready and give some of his results on he's got.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just an open discussion. There's a lot of, I mean, I'm expecting a call from Rock on it. Today at some point here too, so a lot of stuff going on right now. This is
Gary, read that.
Evolving.
I'm working on it.
Let's put it that way.
You have some other hot burner issues. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and I know there's a power planning or whatever they call themselves these days. Council workshop going on right now, which I was supposed to be at as a panel member for the Nation. It's predation, and it's all predation, not just avian, but it's
pinniped.
Piscine, pinniped as well. You know, but so a lot of attention, kind of, and there's a crediting issue for the core. I mean, it's meeting the standards doesn't meet the credits. All the crediting that goes on, and the avian hazing was fit into that as well. So it isn't just meeting the standards.
I didn't know that there was credits for the avian hazing program back when it first came out. That's what I was hearing a lot of, was that there wasn't, so you guys settled?
Yeah. No, I don't know. I don't know what, I'd have to go back and look to see, but I mean, that's the buy-up, the just saying that we met the standards and so now we don't have to do or don't have to pay attention to the RPAs is something that I would be a little careful about. You know, I mean, we got to be
up for more discussion, kind of. Yeah.
You want to talk about McNary while we're at it?
Yeah, I think so. Right? I think that's another one where I think I might have thrown that in there or asked you guys to put that in there. So, I mean, really what I'd like to see, FPOM needs to make a recommendation, I think. This is probably CRFM funded.
It is.
Hmm?
It would be.
It would be, yeah. That's shaking your head. Yes, but I think that funding and that action should come from FPOM as a recommendation. So, you know, this would be looking at the number of birds that are in the tail race. I've talked to Carl on the project, Carl Duggar on the project, and he's got some ideas about how we would at least implement some partial wire arrays, given that we still have a question about transport and the need to get barges across the tail race. And so those are all sort of
I don't know if you brought that up at SCT. I did feel Randy out. You know, I think his response pretty much is, whether or not CRFM would fund it would depend on whether or not we meet performance standards and whether or not the transport issue is resolved.
Well, it shouldn't be there. I'll talk to Randy about that because I don't
something
see
something for
that
SCT
way.
To talk about.
So we haven't met standards, but and we'll be looking next year.
I mean, the
year.
Cost of implementing a whole new wire array would need to come from CRFM, and it's appropriate for CRFM.
And it depends on what you do, too. I mean, if you're tying off in the powerhouse to the Navalon guide wall, that may not need a lot of funds. If you're going from a separate tower somewhere along the shoreline, Oregon shore, across to the guide wall, then yes, that's going to be more like John Day.
Well, Brad Eby's justification for why we didn't have them across some of the spillway now was just inability, you know, to do that.
You won't be able to cover especially the lower part of the white water from the TSWs with a powerhouse connection. I know that. But you will cover a lot of it, probably half of it, and you'll get much of the rest of the spill.
I just don't think they had the supports available to go across the spillway, which is why they don't have them. So, you know, tie-offs and that.
Well, that's not Brad. I mean, that should be.
Yeah, I mean, somebody else needs to look at it. But, I mean, historically, somebody had given that answer. Maybe there's some newer materials now that won't.
Well, there certainly is.
Droop as much and things like that.
John Day's example of that.
So you know that John, that new outfall provides a rifle source.
That's been looked at too as a way to attach, and you know, the issue of whether or not you pull the outfall over with the attachment was talked about, and they didn't think that would happen. But some of those are long.
We put wires on the other side of it.
Yeah, the guy wires to hold it up, go all the way to the bridge.
What kind of wires are they using that's going to pull over? That's awesome.
Stainless steel, probably, for their...
That's a lot of weight. Put some wind on
it. It's a lot of weight.
Yeah, we can hold it out of the water when the tail rake comes up, too.
Anticipated in the design of the structure. But the engineers at Walla Walla seem to think that it would not be a problem, but they hadn't done the look. So all I'm saying is you got to be careful when you put lateral load on something that you're not designed, it's not designed for. That's, I just think there's a lot of stuff to talk about here, but I think that stepping back from all that, does O&M, do we think, based on the monitoring that we have going on, that there's enough of a problem at McNary to recommend that they do something? One, then what they do, and so what level, and what the qualifications are in terms of transport. Because with transport, yeah, you can't cover the whole thing, but you can cover a lot of it. So.
So what is the data out there right now? Do we have it?
We just had a study done. The results aren't out yet. That could be pretty helpful. And that
Can we have that presented at the September
FBOM? The performance standard. But there's also the observations of birds.
Data yet at September FBOM.
I can't remember what those are called. I haven't seen one from McNary ever that might have something like an alternative misidentified in it. But I don't know. Who's in charge of writing those? And isn't there a biological requirement of that? I don't know. I can't remember.
That is one of the primary options that would come out of the McNary COP as the first lowest hitting thing you would grab if you weren't meeting performance standards.
So constantly redrafting the copy, though we haven't seen one yet.
I've heard rumors that would be the top option.
Why would you leave that to that point? Why would you spend all the millions of dollars it takes to do the studies when possibility of, like at the Dalles, a few wires, fairly cheap, would allow you to meet the standard using the Dalles as an example. So I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me. That and I'm not just jumping at you, man. It's just that's if you're saying that, that doesn't make sense to me. And the COP, of course, is something that we have very little knowledge of. So other than maybe 2 years ago, all I'm saying is if FPOM through the observations that we have. Which we have observations. I got photos. You've seen them. Think that what we saw last year is something that would deserve a response, and that we could implement some level of response soon.
The only thing that's active that you might be able to tie to because we kicked it off was the bypass outfall. You know that there was the ability to do some coverage around that as part of building that project, and since they're still fixing the pump and the sprinkler, et cetera, we can come back with the recommendation that really should have had for as much coverage as you could manage as part of that and stay outside the transport zone.
I don't know
help the spillway issue.
And I don't know what you can do. I'm not saying that. All I'm asking for FPOM to do is make a recommendation that you start the investigation. That's all I'm saying. What we do is, I can see, I'm talking to Carl and standing out there at the project the other day and having seen what I saw earlier this year with the gulls, I think we could do something fairly quickly. But that's up to the engineers. And that's up to a PM and the whole, all that stuff. Yeah. That's not an O&M issue. That's CRFM. That goes to Fairway, the planning folks. But for us to say, yeah, we think that, we saw a problem last year and that you guys should consider spending funds and getting a program going is what I think O&M should do. So however you want to lay that out there for the committee, it's up to you guys, but I think you need to do that.
I think we're going to be waiting on the data to see where we're at, to see if, how close we are to meeting performance standards. If we're meeting performance standards, then, it's going to be hard to justify this as something that really needs money out of the CRFM program. There's probably going to be other places that need the money more.
I'm still saying this committee, that's the poor's response. That's great. But the committee needs to be able to make a recommendation here. So at some point, do we pull in photos? Do we pull in, we were trying to implement this program of monitoring goals of the projects. We've been doing that this year. What are the data? What do we see? Was it was what I saw earlier this year a one-shot deal one day, just happened to be the day I was there? Or is this something that's a bigger issue?
So maybe you were talking about getting Nathan to come in. Maybe what we need to do is have a McNary presentation from someone
in September. And
because I, you know, as far as this median standards go, what the BIOP says is implement RPA, the RPA for four wires and hazing. It says implement that. It doesn't say do the standards and see if you meet them and then implement them. It doesn't say that.
Right, but we have wire. We do have wire existing in McNary, so it's not like we don't already have
just
some wire.
Right.
Right,
which we're not seeing a problem with, but we are seeing a problem with spillway where most of the fish are passing.
Right.
So, I mean, that's.
So, I mean, at the time you wrote the BIOP, we would look at McNary and say, yeah, we have wires in place. So, you know, that was never put on a prioritized list of things to do.
Effective. That's not effective.
You know, we don't know what next year will bring. I think we're victims at McNary, possibly, of what's going on the Mid-Sea, too. You know, as they move and shunt, and as the lower river moves and shunts birds around, you know, McNary may just be the home where stuff lands. And so I don't know next year, depending on the programs they have at other projects, whether we still have the issue or not, I guess.
More reason probably to do that, because the other projects will move them to you guys.
Yeah.
And I think the whole river needs to be covered in the lower river. There's no doubt in my mind that you need to put wires up at that dam, just like we've done at the other river dams.
I don't have a problem
with effective way
getting,
of doing
getting it,
it
funded is kind of the issue. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, CRFM funded. There's money there, so it's a matter of. I mean, I wouldn't see why O&M would fight that. I don't really understand why the Corps would fight it. And if we need to get a discussion about the BIOP, this isn't the place to do it.
Right.
But we can do that later. But again, all I really want this committee to do is to assess the gull issue at McNary and then make a recommendation on whether the wires are necessary.
Yeah, whether or not funding's available, this committee still needs to make recommendations.
Right.
Right. Sure.
So we can, we'll take it back to the district. We'll talk with the CRFM program managers. We'll get some data that should be available for the next FPOM and present that and.
Let's get Nathan
hopefully
here.
Get an update from
let's get Carl.
Yeah,
you know, the guys that are doing the actual monitoring. Let's look at the data and what we're seeing and the prevalence and the you know, the severity.
Salmonid and non-salmonid consumption.
And that's the other side of it too, is lamprey. Yeah, because some of the thought was that while I was there and saw the problem, it was the lamprey passage was what was causing the reaction by the gulls.
It really came on that.
But I didn't see them in the powerhouse, which usually we do see, at least at John Day O'Dell's. At John Day, we saw a lot of those birds go straight to the powerhouse, and they defied the wires. They just went right through them.
So then maybe the lamprey folks on their, out of their lamprey money should be looking at this.
Then you guys can just start coughing up more money, then I'll just list them. And then it gets really ugly.
Well, this can get as ugly as you want it, so I don't know that it needs to
roll it back.
Yeah, I don't think it needs to.
What we're going to do right now is just talk about the data, make a recommendation, and then see how various parties respond.
Right.
So.
With that said, we're going to move on.
Yes.
We want to talk about the hydro cannon pump place, the repair on the area there, the outfall. Just a little update. That is scheduled for next week to install a temporary pump. At the outfall there, hopefully it'll happen. There may be some delays concerning the grading the walkway because the last high water event damaged some more grading. So if they can get that fixed and they can save the access side again.
It didn't take long.
Just again,
so was the old, did the old pump just die? Or
well, no, the walkway too.
Yeah.
What do you mean old?
Well, you know, with high water, everything goes underwater.
it's never been secured adequately,
and so it just
April,
is breaking it free.
Out.
Of the
right. Well, at least I got to walk out to the end of it once.
It'll be float boats after this.
Put a bigger pump out there?
Actually, be a temporarily smaller one. Decided it's the season, then this winter outage, it would try to fix that big one, the new one.
I guess the question is, you've seen the birds, save your money and just do it at the end. I mean, I think my last look at the bird counts had dropped off, and there's so few fish going through, I don't think there's going to be a lot of birds there. Honestly, you might just save your money.
Yeah, speaking with Carl Duggar, he says I haven't seen hardly any birds there at all.
Yeah.
So,
Gary, said McNary, with a few number of fish going through, super low bird numbers, why don't we just have to save the money on the temporary sprinklers? Since it's going to be a smaller pump, it's going to be less effective.
Oh, why would you put it in?
Exactly.
I mean, yeah. It's too.
Save your money. And
the horse has left the barn.
Is this $1 million?
It's CRM with the bypass, and I guess, you know, that question did come up a week ago, but the only thing that we don't know is when they really will get the permanent fix done. So if they don't go ahead with the temporary fix and they run into problems with the permanent, you know, we could be here next spring without one. And so I said, nah, you better put something in, so just so we have something, because the way things go, we could be in March next, you know, something happens as they build it and we have nothing. I didn't want to have to come back here next April and have nothing.
Yeah, especially the next one when they put it in, they need to remember that it's wet.
Well, there's some other issues that Ken's alluding to here, and they can't fasten appropriately the grip strut that they've put down to the support structure. And so they may have to come in with a whole new surface there in order to be able to weld it to the structure. And
that's what they need to do. I mean, what they used were those self-tapping screws, and that was a failure waiting to happen.
And I don't think they can, with the existing metal that they use with the grip strut they put down, they apparently can't weld to the supports.
Oh, really?
So there's an issue. There's an issue between metals
supports
or something
steel.
There.
Isn't
it called a bolt structure?
So there's kind of some big issues, there's, you know, access issues and stuff that are related to the pump, so that's why I'm not sure that. So I don't know, I actually supported it for that reason, so.
If you think that they're not going to be able to get a permanent structure in your, and CRFM money, they got to spend CRFM money, those guys get dinged for not being appropriately defunded, so fine.
I don't know, just as a
Yeah,
as a fail-safe, you know, we've spent 3 months trying to even get the temporary in now.
There wasn't a lot of birds really working the outfall, even without the cannon. It wasn't a huge issue compared to what was going on in the spillway and the rest of it from what I saw. So, not too concerned, however you do it. It's a small pump, big pump, whatever, it'll help. But I don't think that's kind of tip of the iceberg of what's going on out there.
Gary, you spent more time looking at the end of that outfall.
Yeah.
When I was out there, a couple of times I've looked at that first pump out there. Sure didn't seem like it was very effective.
That's not
good. Yeah, and if you're going to put a smaller one out there, what's it really going to do?
And there's something called wind that they kind of get in here.
Yeah, it's not going to do a lot of good. I mean, it's something that was designed to be out there, and I suppose because of that, it ought to be their wires would be better. But
I guess we thought from a Pelican standpoint that it was somewhat effective, although, you know, the other thing that's been talked about is something that Lomo has thought about doing, and that's just having kind of a rope that trails along the bottom there that kind of interrupts the path of being able to just nicely float by, too.
Yeah, I know Bill's been thinking about different ideas there. I'd like to see if that works.
Are you going to put more of those bird spikes out of there, or longer on the pipe?
Yeah, most of those came off, so they need to be replaced or a better way.
Those seem to be more effective than the cannon
was. Yeah, I mean, they're roosting on there. Really what they're doing there is they're roosting there and then going back to the spillway.
Yeah, they installed a wire above the top of the pipe.
But it came off.
It came off, yeah.
There's a small section. A
chunk of it came off.
I mean,
there's
like
four sections. Mm-hmm. One of the four is gone or whatever number, but yeah, it's
okay. So that's something for you to take back and ask.
It's not going to stay on as long as we overtop this outfall.
Well, that's kind of an interesting discussion back to when we were first, you know, trying to do this. We had that discussion on the way down here. Well, we don't want to have anything that moves because, you know, that was mechanical. But then as all this replacement stuff that we're doing, I was like, you know what, by the time we're doing all this replacement for every time it goes underwater, we probably could have built something with a pivot that would allow us to not be doing all this all the time. You know,
for the outfall?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like crazy.
Stuck with what we got now. But, yeah, I just think that that cannon is sort of window dressing almost, really.
So you would rather go with none and take a risk potentially, but I'm okay with that. You're still on board with don't worry about it now, and if we don't have anything next spring you'll be screaming, but Gary's still not going to be screaming. He's not going to be screaming that loud because it really isn't that effective to begin with.
Yeah.
All right.
I'll have a deaf ear to him.
I'll forget all about.
So Ken will see what he can do, although we may already be in a contracting process, yeah. Right?
Did you just get an APHIS guy to stand out there?
How well does the Bonneville?
There's no grading for him to stand on. But since the outfall goes out of water, the grading's been getting moved away.
Oh.
So you got your opportunity to walk out the end.
I walked out there, no problem.
Nine more.
I did too.
Nine more.
Can think about while you were standing out there, if the big wave had come, you might have moved downstream with the decking.
Water reeds.
There's a problem keeping the grading on, but that can be resolved.
Right.
And that's not that hard. We're not talking the whole thing.
Right.
We're talking the last 20 feet or so of this thing. So
we do believe that they probably will be able to resolve that one.
If they can't, then I think they need some new people.
All right, let's move on. Lisa's going to give a forecast flow out to September because there is going to be requests coming here on.
We can't fix an outfall.
So I'm going to get a forecast here, you guys.
Yeah.
You don't want to listen for a second.
No.
All right. No. I'm going to get a forecast out to September, and then BPA update is a request
this is
for
an update of the
open geometry power house.
The forecast, Lisa's going to call it up here, is greater than the turbine capacity without the going outside 1% starting on the 1st. The flows are so high.
Awesome. That we do.
Right, right.
Just
so,
in the first few days, essentially, it looks like the flows that we'll see.
Power house capacity. And so the reason for bringing that up is, like, what I heard of our last meeting talking about this is we don't want spill to keep the merry-go-round going. And so we want to, when spill ends, we want it to end. And the only way you can do that, it looks like, for the first several days is to go outside 1%. And originally we proposed that the outside 1% was going to start on the 1st. The moving around of things made it go to the 17th.
Of September, you're talking about?
Right. Yeah.
Right. So as the backstop, if the flows do materialize as forecasted, have the ability to go outside on the 1st.
That's about 15 kcfs.
About 30. Enough? It's 30. With the higher head, the lower flows and higher head, outside geometry is 30.
It's 1.5 k per unit, 10 units. That's about 15. So
it was up actually 3 this spring.
Hmm?
It was up to 3 this spring. Open geometry.
Yeah, but what's our head now? It's going to be 50 plus, right? At least.
It's getting up, yeah. So it'll go down. Mm-hmm. But it seems to be the make or break point as far as how much flow.
Well, where are we at with us getting HTC, getting a table for us so we can see what that is? Because, I mean, I've worked on that. And now I'm looking at it and going, well, I don't recognize these levels. What's going on? So I don't know.
They are
going
to provide one for us.
I know I asked Jim Keel to do that, but I don't know where that's at.
We're going to have it for the update for the
FPP, but that's next year. I mean, let's get this.
Well, as soon as the tables are available, and they will be available for inclusion in that, and I told them I needed them no later than November 1st for
but
change
I'm thinking funds. September 1 would be nice.
If we can get them by then, that would be fine.
So
at least for Powerhouse 1.
Would like to see what that is, because we need to know what we're talking about. And what I don't want to do is get above the open geometry point that we... As you do get above it, you get higher and higher pressures on those runners, and I don't know that not that many juveniles out there now, I guess, but it's...
The concern was the fallback on cults is what it mostly walked away with last time, and you don't want to turn on the spillway if you're running the first powerhouse as your first priority.
More.
And given that we only have 3 units in the second powerhouse, you definitely have to run the first, so it's going to be on. We'll have 3 at that time. We should have...
Unit 11.
12, 13, 14, and 11 maybe. Maybe not.
Probably not.
There's 14 now screens. It doesn't.
Yeah, it doesn't have screens. Okay.
No, but most of them don't have screens in second power.
Right. It's just 11, 12, and 18 that have screens. And 11 is a wonderful choice.
And 15 through 18 will be out of service due to the T12.
The T12 outage.
So you have 3 units. Plus the
machine. Awesome.
Whatever.
And so the current SDP shows flows. September 3rd will be below 160, which is what we're looking at as a threshold.
Yeah.
So
below 160?
Just a couple days. Yeah, so the first couple days will be right above one-sixtieth of forecasts.
I saw that it dropped dramatically after the 31st, so.
But we're bringing up that sometime during that period you're going to exceed turbine capacity, and so we wanted to change the date to be the first, or was originally intended to be, because of the higher flows.
Well, I mean, spilling that amount's not going to matter either from a Gulf fallback standpoint. You're not going
to 30 to 40 k.
30 to 40 k. Is it 40? We're going to get that through that powerhouse. That open geometry versus where we're at now. That's there's
where,
no way.
Where's your threshold for where you don't care? As far as the models go.
Well, I'm just trying to think. Okay, how much is the first powerhouse?
Well, supposedly 130 if you're outside open geometry, and that's where we have to look at the head. We don't have a table yet. That's where we're hoping to get it.
So
right now we have 100 if you have all units. They're 10K per unit is what we're getting right now.
10K, so we got 100.
Second powerhouse, you got a 45 because you got three units.
Yeah,
and then you got the corner collector and miscellaneous is 12.
And then
that was 157.
Yeah, so it's right around the 160 is where you're breaking out.
So you just need to.
And so the other thing that goes on is we're going to have a fishing season. They're limiting our forebear rate. And so that's the other thing we may want to, do you want to flex on that or?
Yeah, well, no. I don't feel like getting beat up that bad in the office. I think I look at also, because I saw the proposed, what they're proposing for fish season. I'll take a look at that.
Usually it's the peak of the fish season.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the long fish. But most of them are, you're only talking about 2 or 3 day fishing seasons this year. And then I think the long is probably going to be around 1 day.
Labor.
Labor Day.
I'll wait another day.
I can really do a lot of
work. Yeah. Made a mess of fun of it last year.
Getting a lot done, though.
What?
Getting a lot done.
Spandex out of hippo.
All I can say.
You want to stand still.
What color is spandex? Like you have to go all the way up to the
Sammy.
For sure.
I assume it's black.
The tie-dye spandex is going to have
Coordination. Come on, guys. Coordination.
So, Gary, are you thinking we'll have to go look at the 1.5 at open geometry and spill the rest?
You know, we don't have, I mean, juvenile passage is pretty much done at that point, and adult, I mean, you're going to kill them one way or the other.
Yeah. Kill them as juveniles or wait to kill them as adults? Joking.
Probably no difference in mortality potential through powerhouse one, but you could pull more through it by running it higher. Would you rather pass them through spill and recycle versus 40% mortality through the runners?
Yeah, I know.
Well, this is just, it sucks no matter how you look at it.
Yeah.
You'd have to rather spill them than run through the turbine.
Yeah, I'd almost rather spill them. Well, I mean, up to 20-30K, I don't know that, you spread that out, the odds of fallback goes way down, so I don't know if there's any break-even point or
Would you even spread out or just put towards the end base to do better adult traction for the ladders?
Put it all the way across, or just the end base?
I just did like the couple on the end base.
Do like a John Day spill.
Put it towards the end, get better adult traction for the ladder. And
what's the capacity of the powerhouse within 1%?
100.
No, I mean, okay, I'm sorry. The powerhouses and miscellaneous.
145.
So we're in that maybe 20K range. Yeah.
It makes the difference. That's
well, I guess, though, it seems like we're splitting hairs here, because I thought I heard powerhouse one would be 100, then powerhouse two would be 45, and then miscellaneous 12. So you're talking 157. We're capacity is 160. We're talking about just some change that we might need to go at some open hours. Geometry. So it seems like if we're getting all fired up about a delta of approximately 3K spread out across powerhouse one, that seems like we're
the reason it's a maybe is because you don't know how hot it is at the time and what John Day and the Dells have to do to release water and stay within your foot pound operating range. So okay. Most likely it's not a problem.
It seems.
But there's a chance that you're going to need it.
For the peaks.
Peaks in the first few days, especially when your flows are really, really, really close.
It's not the average, it's the peaks.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
thought you said this was going to start about the same time you're going to close the corner collector too, isn't it?
No, the corner collector starts close on the 17th.
If that's
so, who's that? The corner collector is going to be open. Yeah.
So we won't know until the 4th of September.
We're going to look at the courts and see.
See, that's another issue. I don't know that that
right.
should
it's
be
in such horrible shape.
Option.
We can't fix it. That's their call.
Yeah, I don't know that I like that option. Like that being an option.
Didn't even last 40 years.
What's
that? Said it didn't even last 40 years like the rest of this stuff that's falling
Gary,
apart.
Why don't we get
not even 15?
Say you spill it to 15, or you spill past
15
that.
15 years.
That's about
what's falling apart.
That
would be a benefit for adult passage. Yeah. Getting them through, and I don't think that would cause much fallback. Yeah.
So how would you do that? So like, for example, on an hourly basis when it was shaping, for example, so would you actually be doing that? So let's say, for example, like that 15K was happening for 3 or 4 or 5 hours, so you'd anticipate just doing it literally on an hourly basis?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you spill a little bit extra for those couple of hours, then you're going to have the endings going anyways for adult traction. Yeah, you're already going to have some spill for adult traction.
The idea is to get adult passage through those throwaway ladders, so that's not a problem if you shut it down, run it a few hours and shut it down, that's not a problem.
So Doug, it would be written like the first priority, second Carlos first is the first priority, second Carlos is the next priority, next would be 15K, and then you go outside open jail.
Right, and they'll pick it up from there.
Right, you just
I wouldn't want to go much more than 15.
Yeah, say that again.
20 would be so
Powerhouse 2 is the priority powerhouse.
Correct, so you'd run all those three units. All
right.
And then you'd be going to the first powerhouse, and you'd run all 10 units if they're available. Then you'd go to 15K spill.
Yep.
And then you would come back and go outside open job.
Yeah, the 15K spill should be a special pattern just for this. I mean, let's talk.
And where did you want that place?
It would be on the end base. Not the end base themselves, but I mean, I think we should look at that. I don't want the gates too far open.
No, I'd do 1, 2, 3 max.
Probably have
16, 17, 18. And like do 2.5.
No, let's see, 17's got
17.
Yeah, so we won't do it.
Just leave it open.
Right.
Or
just close
it. It is posted on the website. I'll have
right,
it
I would probably close it completely.
It
just use
16.
So you said
that's going to be, if you're talking basically 7 on the side, 4 and 1, 3 in the other.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Just spread
so
it
I'm
out.
So I'm sorry, it was 1, 2,
and
3.
One through one bay.
And then 16. What did you say?
16 and 18.
16 and 18.
And just one. Gary, what do you think? Just flat load the spill through those? Or do a little crownage?
No, I think flat.
Okay.
Flat's fine, yeah. Those entrances will be fine.
Then.
We're not talking more than a couple feet open
base?
Here anyway, so.
16, 18, and then just do like 1, 2, 3.
You won't do 17 because it'll be out.
You can't do 17 because you've had a hoist broken there for,
ever.
God, almost as long as my child's been alive. So.
So not one?
Can I name the question for my child?
Well, one's already on, so you want to open it more,
so
don't you?
So it's 18.
Right, 1 and 18 are the ones that will be on, and so you want to add on to those.
You want to add on to 1 and 18?
Yeah.
Right now they're 2.5, aren't they?
The end base is
right.
No,
they're
only
down,
6 inches.
Or 1.2 or something, wasn't it?
Yeah,
got about 1.2 versus
2.2. Why don't you just do that, because we need what, basically A to side, do 3 or 4 and go like 3 or 4 and 1, 3 and the next
right.
one, I'll take it to 7 and then do the next one.
Let's just spread it out over, we're talking 15K, spread it out over 6 bays.
We just got 7.5 per side. Right. 7.5 per side.
Well,
so
you don't
one's
know.
Open
I mean, it might be 5K. And you, it's whatever
right.
it needs
well, then,
to be.
Then
so what's a dog worth that on?
I thought it was the 1.2,
but
wasn't
we,
it?
We don't need to use the dog.
Whatever setting you can open them to.
We can do half-foot increments.
Okay. So whatever amount of water that is for half-foot increment, if you have an over a base, you would add the half-foot on.
We had to close one and then get into the 2.4 scuttlebutt, which are
looking
at half
foot.
You could probably do.
Yeah, man. There's no juveniles. So
what you could do is dig out the old crown spill pattern, which actually went, it crowned out at high flows and what came in at low at the old spill pattern.
Ooh, I don't know if I go back that far.
What year? Copies.
What year was that?
91.
Yeah, something like that. Early 90s. That old spill pattern. That would be. That
I
would,
had a 1999 one.
Let's just dig out the old spill pattern.
Okay, so who should be the digger outer? Or
there is the oldest one here.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say you could have the new NOAA employee. Hey, have you introduced this guy? Ed? He's a new employee. I haven't seen him for
a while. Yeah, don't ask me. I'm not. I'm out of here. I'm in the car. I'm driving to the Midwest as soon as this meeting's over.
You're driving?
Yes.
So Ed, is that something you might have, the old 91 pattern?
You've got them in your office, right?
I've got the old box. I've got the old fish passes plans going back to whenever. Yeah.
I don't know if I got them back in 91.
I think you got them back.
You don't. Yeah.
It was later than 91 that we made the big change. Right. So 91's right. A good. If you could pick a 90 pre-95 plan, you'd probably be about right.
So Doug, do you have that information, or do you want to?
A 91 FPP. I don't know the location of that. I can look for, but I don't.
I got a 94 and a 95. I was just thinking.
94
seems like it'd be better for adults.
Okay. So what you're saying though is you don't want the 1, 2, 3, 16, 18 pattern. You want the pre-94 crown. And that the last date of that, like that was the last date of the 22R. And the third pickup was the 94. So you want the 94. You want the pre. You want the 94.
Because now we put all the spill for the meat.
You know what it was like though. The old patterns, they went from the ends. And so it was an end pattern at low spills, and then it started to crown out and spill went up. So
we're
trying
to clip off the beginning part of this. Right. Yeah. The first 15K is what he's saying, showed a way to get up to 15K.
That's the way it was.
Do we have that low though?
I think it goes all the way down to
15.
I don't know.
I only remember down like 35.
I just remember it did. It thinned out to like one bay at the end.
Bill,
of
you can't leave yet. You're not done yet. Crown pattern.
The crown. He's crowning. Someone had to go there.
So how would we like to tie this one up? I think we can come up with a spill pattern that goes at 1.2K increments up to 15. That's only 7 settings. So we should be pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's I just look at the old fish basket plan.
Okay, we'll see what we can find in there.
Yeah. Something together, send it out, let people comment, huh?
Yeah, we got a little time. Just wanted to know what the concept was we're trying to get.
Yeah. Okay. All right, well, let's move on. It's 10 to 12, so let's power through this last 15 items. Mini jacks. Hoo-hoo!
Do we care?
Somebody did.
Gary inquired about this at the last meeting, and I think Ben and Ann answered it. Looks like we have a little verbiage here, right? Steve wrote it up. So I don't know if Gary needed more discussion on that.
No, I just was wondering. I was out at the Bonneville and the counter. I was watching her counting them, and some of those small... Obviously, mini jacks went through, and she called them juveniles. And I thought, well, if somebody's counting these things, if anybody cares, she may not be getting them right. Okay, that was my concern. If nobody's counting them, I don't care.
Do you know who
nobody
that was?
Is.
I do not know who that was.
Because, I mean, I have been counting these people, and you 12 inches is, if there's something sitting on the line, again, it's the same with the jack to adult ratios. You can get some people, but. I mean, they're obviously a juvenile, they got...
Yeah, par marks or whatever, but no, these guys were, thick, silver.
But 12 inches is the cutoff, and so you're going to get a little bit of play with it. There may be some people that are... I mean, I haven't counted with everybody since there's been a ton of mini jacks, but I mean, I have talked to a couple people recently, like, no, I wouldn't count that one.
All right.
It's...
As
in
a
general,
jack
we're not
or a mini jack.
As a jack.
Right.
You guys don't keep
because we're not separating that.
That's fine. If nobody's counting, then
if they're less than 12 inches, they're not being counted.
Okay.
So if there happens to be a monstrous juvenile that's 12 and a half, then they're being counted as a jack.
I don't care about that.
What I think is more likely is to have like a 9 or a 10 inch mini jack, and you don't count those as mini jacks. You count those as nothing.
Correct.
Right, and that's if we're not counting
not
them, then
being counted. So
they don't count juveniles.
It's fairly
right.
Well, yeah, because you can have two fish. One's it's a true mini jack, one's a juvenile, they're the same size.
But you can tell the difference in them. I mean,
right,
you can't
but then
tell
we, I mean, we're not getting down to that kind of
nitty
gritty. We're basing it on length.
That's fine.
And I'd say overall, we're not counting juveniles as jacks.
No, I've never said they were.
Right, but I'm just.
Right.
There may be a few that are kind of little, whatever you want to call them,
that are getting Canada's jacks, or maybe a teensy bit, but overall.
No, I don't care about that. I just, all I thought of, I didn't know if anybody was keeping track of the jacks, and if they were, I was a little skeptical of the split there. So
are you satisfied now?
Yeah. You know, all right. Nobody cares.
Let's move on.
Six.
Way off.
Well, there are some studies that
you can't predict run size anymore.
That it's jacks, actually, there's so many jacks coming back. If they count mini jacks.
Oh, there's all kinds of reasons why you might want to know.
Really high. But I mean, it seems like it's important for overall.
I'm not saying that if nobody cares, I don't care out of ignorance.
No,
I know that
there's
a reason why we should care, but if nobody does, it's not my job.
You can say the same thing about the jack to adult ratio.
Yep.
You know, we got to have some kind of definition, yeah. Whether or not it's entirely accurate. But
there's reasons why people ought to care, but
if a specific hatchery cares and they're changing their practices, then they pit tag them and they would get that data as they were moving through. So, you know, you're kind of getting back to that basic premise. If you put them out too big, then you get a lot of jacks.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And if they've got tags, that should tell you if they're
right
back first year.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's like in some studies where they come up with a smolt to adult ratio, sometimes that's measured as a return to Bonneville, but often for hatcheries it's based on how many are actually returning to the hatchery.
I'm follow Bill
then
out
would,
of here.
It would be included.
The rest of this
I am.
You are?
I'm done.
No, I'm going to follow Bill out of here. I got to go in 10
right.
minutes.
It's only a couple little...
So the Dalles units 1 and 2 in the PUD, what do you got there, Big Bob?
Awesome.
It's actually unit 1. Yeah, unit 1 and 2. This is a follow-up from a memo that was sent out a couple weeks ago. Unit 1 and 2 failed. We had a major breaker failure. It looked like it was going to be a month outage, but they got back in 2.5 weeks, and so it was from July 17 to August 2. We switched the sewage gates over to the unit 3 during that outage, and then we switched them back now. So.
Cool.
Back
cool.
Normal operation, just
you have the normal operation back just in time for the study to be over.
Yeah.
Good timing. But was it? Is this going to be? Is it a problem? Just like kind of once out, or is it something that's going to be more chronic?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. It was like the breaker exploded. They were. It was going to be out for a long time. So.
Explode
yeah.
Breaker.
Good job.
Cool. Thanks.
So they're back and running.
And what's the PUD?
Wasco County PUD is proposing putting in a second turbine on the north fish ladder.
Are they interested in doing one on the east ladder?
Yes, they are very interested in doing one.
I like that.
They figure they'll do this one.
Oh, there's three.
So they're going through approval process right now. They said it's like, you know, probably a 50-50, and it's going to be a, you know, quite a while before this is actually.
It's going to take. Well, they got to go through a FERC, I would assume.
But essentially, it's a turbine, a duplicate turbine of what they have right now, with a doubled amount of water that we
this
have
going
to
talk
the fishway. And as most of you probably know, we're only running one of the two entrances on the north
that
side.
That's all
so,
the problems.
So we have the available entrance.
Nice.
We
don't
have available water.
Photoshop
down. It's just you don't want to give up. So.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not there. Oh, it's yours?
And I got
to... Who owns the water?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can't tell us what
I'm going to wrap it up.
Inform you what they're doing.
Here, you want to call them?
Sorry.
Well, I don't think there's much going, you know, so that...
They just brought... Well, yeah, they're going to coordinate with Carver District.
This is what you... They're basically just delving their whole thing.
I like the Photoshop job.
Okay.
Did you do that?
No, they did that.
Oh,
and actually, I'll have an electronic copy that they put in that file. But I didn't get it from the
Everyone else is great, except for
more power.
That's not generated by GPS.
You wanted to add the Bob's employment with POD after he retires from the court depends on his decision.
For sure.
Okay. Any questions?
Y'all are going to leave, so.
More to come on that.
Really?
Yeah.
if you're leaving, then the meeting is adjourned.
I think we can move really quickly. There's not much. Yeah.
We still all have task groups afterwards, so I don't know why you're all excited.
Okay, coordination forums, there was nothing there.
No, go back. That's coordination discussion and review of the coordination process.
Of the MOC process. Is that you, Tim?
Laura's actually requested this particular item, and it came about because of our repeated failure to actually follow the process.
Discussion.
What do you want, Tammy?
The MOC coordination process.
The discussion of the process.
Apparently you brought this up, Tom?
Though I'm sure I probably made some comments about after that delightful little goose issue.
And I think it was also John Day might have sparked it as well.
Oh, you mean John Day had hit us to an RV when we're going to do one in 2 weeks?
Yeah.
And it's an emergency, and I said, why?
And which was the little goose issue that...
It was a little goose, no, it was low... Look, which one was it? Dave, which one was that? It's like, they're talking about the flow and we're going to swap out the... Yeah, it had to be... It was the little goose thing on the whole SDP thing. Doug remembers it because he's got a couple of knots upside the head from that one. So.
Yeah.
Oh, way back.
Yeah, it's when I got the right... Somehow I got the right SDP and everyone else had the wrong one.
Oh, right, right.
And you guys said, hey, we're going to change it. I said, why? Because the SDP that you guys sent me says it's not a problem. And we got the email, you guys were going to change it. I responded at, I think, 3:15... from that email from that day, and you guys said, we didn't hear back by 2, we're going to do it regardless on Friday, and I said, what the hell do you have? And then we basically, Russ got excited, and then we said, that's when we had a big fuss going. If you guys are going to do something like this and you get a negative response, at the very least, we should at least make a call, have some sort of notification, because I actually had to contact Greg to find out what you guys actually ended up doing. And that was where I got a little irritable, finding out that I had said no, I never heard back, and then I actually had to contact Greg that next week and say, hey, Greg, so what are you guys end up doing? Oh, yeah, we swapped it out. So even though Russ and I told you not to, you went ahead and did it and didn't tell us why you were going to do it and then didn't even notify us that you actually had done it. So that's why we said, you know, it seems like the process seems to...
The problem is...
I don't know, you know. So
well, I think the problem was...
Oh, am I expecting something better at work?
There was no follow-up that went out to close the loop to let people know what the decision was and what went forward.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what you were lacking.
I mean, yeah,
and follow-up, I think, has been an issue, not just for the group, but also back to the electronic and getting things on the web. And so it is a place where... I think we're aware that Walla Walla, you know, needs to do better. And as you're noticing, we're starting to rotate other people in and out here to try to get some further assistance. So Ken has become more involved than he has been in the past and has kind of joined the other two bios, John and Greg, in working these. And hopefully we will have less things falling through the cracks. But follow-up is critical. And follow-up is the thing that what happens is... When things are, you know, early on, there was a lot going on. We had a lot of people from the projects calling with a lot of last minute things because they had a lot of contractors out there. So, you know, you leave one thing and you move on to the next to try to get it out there on a short fuse, and then people were forgetting to go back and follow up on what else they had started. So, okay. So I think the message here is do a better job of following through on your coordination forms.
That, and also the projects need to perhaps have a better understanding of looking ahead and allowing for the 2-week coordination period, unless it's truly an emergency, because as the FPP is written, we can deal with emergencies, but if it's not an emergency, then we need to...
Well, like this morning, you know, Lomo feels like there's debris on the exits, that's covered in the fish passage plan. They ought to be able to do what they need to do. On the other hand,
so
it
MOC
impacts
isn't
spill.
Needed for that?
So then we're like, okay, if you're going to impact a spill pattern, we have to coordinate.
Not if it's covered in the FPP.
Yeah,
but
the spill pattern
one.
Change wasn't covered.
We do a debris spill. Well, it's fine. I mean, they can do that.
It's not
but
a debris
then
spill.
Get it completed, because otherwise we have a lot of holes on the website. But for Portland District as well, we need to look ahead a little bit better and coordinate things.
Well, I think people are getting a lot more forms, which is where the frustration is, because we have a lot more reporting just to meet the legal constraints that we have on operating the system under court order. And so for coverage, knowing that there's people out there watching operations, then we need the paperwork to cover any change of operations. And a lot of times the request is coming to us so late and or to the project. And then when it comes to the project late, essentially you start getting into mods of construction if their construction contractor is asking them on site to make changes, and hence why they try to push something through fast. You know, and it is what it is. It's an ugly beast at this point in time, you know. But I think we're all hoping that the future is a few less coordination forms.
So.
Hey, Tammy.
Yes.
Right now, we try to coordinate anything outside the fish passage plan.
Yeah.
On the final forms that you post to the website, and I'm wondering if. In the you have that like little results thing, like, you know, approved or was coordinated or whatever, but do we have a place in there for, you know, at the end for the actual results or whatever the operation was?
Oftentimes, if I get those results, I will update those change forms and put them in, especially if it was a particularly contentious one.
Right.
If it was something pretty standard, then sometimes if there are no results other than, yeah, we did what we said we were going to do, then I don't always put them in there. But if something happened or there was a change, those go in there.
So long and short, so if you do have, if you don't have consensus about an operation or you get contrary thing and you have to make a decision, have we locked in on what the process will be? We'll try to formulate a conference call. If that's not an option, we'll at least give them like a notification, say, hey, sorry, things just are moving too fast. We've got to do this. Or something. I mean, right now, that seems to be that was one of my big issues with the process. Like, yes, you guys did a notification. It wasn't within 2 weeks. I understand things happen, so I can stomach that for the moment. But it's like once we get contrary recommendations, that's where we need to have something a little more formalized, is what I'm looking for.
Right. Just be a resolution.
Well, you know, the problem that you're running across with that example was based on the forecast that the Corps had, we were following what we thought the STP was going to be following what was in the FPP. And so you guys were kind of sitting out there saying, no, we don't like it, and it seemed like
no,
one
it wasn't
of these...
that. I had a different STP that you guys had sent me that had vastly different things. And
right.
The STP
and
I had was
right. I get
so
it.
If we
I
had
get
a
it.
Conference call, we could
and we even
said.
Provided it to you. That's
I know,
even
that's
better.
What, that's what I love even more.
I like
you
it too.
You provided me the information that made me right. Awesome. Thank you. Keep doing that. So my point
just
is...
Just remember saying, that when there's any questions of how good we are in supporting some of the tribal interests.
Yes. You give me the right information, you give yourself the wrong information, and then ignore me with the right information. There we go. My point being is, if we had a conference call, we could have at least gotten this and said, hey, here's my STP, and then I would initially say, oh my crap, why are these different? We could at least had a conversation, we could have said, Tom, yours is totally wrong, and then I would have giggled greatly when I found that mine turned out to be right, but at least we would have had a discussion beforehand. And we could have found out why we had different opinions. Because I actually wrote up in the email, I said, the STP I've got shows temperature, the flows aren't going to drop to this date. And I was a little surprised that someone didn't queue up and said, wow, he is really too close to the epoxy over there because his numbers are way off. And that to what we had in STP. So I'm just saying, if we'd had someone, we could have at least closed the loop on why there was difference of opinions about supposedly the exact same STP we were all looking at. And because we didn't have that, I thought I was right. Thankfully, I was. And you guys thought you were right. You weren't, so thankfully again. So there we go. I'm just saying, we just need to have a process about when, if we have different opinions on stuff, let's at least get together and find out why we have different opinions. And if we still have different opinions, that's fine. You guys have to make a tough decision. I understand that. But if we can't at least discuss this, then it's like, why am I coming to these meetings? And why do we have this process?
Right.
So. Yeah, well, I mean, I think you're hitting on one example. You know, you're coming to these meetings, we're having a lot of places where we're not necessarily, and in general the process is to have further discussion. So, you know, I think since that time that message is out there, and I think that is the process. There are some people that make decisions due to whatever reasons on short notice for a variety of factors sometimes that the process fails because of them making decisions.
That's fine. I'm just trying to figure out how are we going to do better about if we do have different opinions. Like on the John Day one, I sent in a comment. They wanted to use RV inspection 2 weeks before. We were planning to take the ladder down anyways for a day. They're calling it emergency and going, wait a minute, how is waiting an extra 2 weeks when we've been running this pump all season this way? Why can't we wait 2 weeks and just double up the outage? And that response got in there. It stimulated some thought on the course thought, and they actually said, okay, great, we're not going to do that. So that one kind of worked out. But it took me having to say, no, why are we doing this? And there was a response back and forth. On the Little Goose one, I said, no, here's what I'm thinking, and I never heard back. So I'm just saying, we need to figure out how to ensure that if there is disagreement, because most times, if you don't hear from me, that means either, yeah, just send me a phone call, something like that. If I don't usually respond back to you, that either means I'm super busy, I'm out of the country and hopefully never coming back, or I'm fine with it.
So Tom, could you put on your message, I expect a response? Well, I know it's understood, it may trigger them just for the... Just
when I say don't do it, I think you need to do this, that's...
But we're used to that.
Oh, I know, but I usually don't respond in an email with that saying, why is your head so far?
I'm available tomorrow from 1 to 3 to talk about
this. Yeah.
Give them some...
I can be even more, if you want, I can be even more obnoxious than normal. That'll be a stretch, but I'll see if I can do that. I don't know how I suddenly got back to you. You guys didn't call back when I told you not to do something. Now it's like, it's my fault for not telling you to call me back?
That's right.
this is the same argument as I get with my children. This is brilliant. Well played, guys. I mean, I'm just saying, I don't know if that's really going to solve the problem. Me making sure, I don't think if I put in there, I expect a response back, if that really would have changed things. If it would have...
Recall that we also have an operating project out there that makes decisions, and even though we're going through coordination sometimes and we tell them, no, you can't do it till we do it, they do it anyway.
Yeah, and then that's you guys. Okay. That's an interesting situation.
We're going to, there's another coordination form that's going to come out that we didn't discuss today where something similar to that happened. We told them, no, we don't want them to do that. They said it was an emergency. They had to do it. They went ahead and did it.
But we need to define what emergency is. Yeah. And I think we did that once.
Maybe we can do a better job in the FPP next year of defining emergency.
Right. What a fish emergency is, or other emergency power emergency.
I mean, that's fine. And next up, if you have an emergency and you can explain to us that it was your emergency, that's fine. That kind of sounds great. Like, but the Little Goose thing, well, that was an emergency.
Yeah, that was all
like,
sounds.
We want to change operations. And that wasn't an emergency.
I've been around for a long time.
We've got a barge coming over there, we've got to close the TSW. There's nothing like that. It's just like, our read of the flow data is that we should drop it now. That's not an emergency. That's a call based on flows. So it doesn't really, there was no really impact one way or the other emergency wise.
Well, okay, this comes down to a couple of things. One, you need to define what an emergency is, mm-hmm. with the project. We'll have to make a decision and we'll be told about it later. That needs to be defined, not just up to somebody's imagination. And the second thing is, when you coordinate and you have folks who disagree with your coordination, then there needs to be a dispute resolution process. Mm-hmm. And whether we go to REOG or whatever it is, eventually, there needs to be some, you know, if a guy says, no, I don't want you to do this in FPOM, if you're coordinating and you ignore him, then what's the point of coordinating? So you need to be able to have, Tom shouldn't say he expects you to get back to him. I expect you to get back. Everybody should expect you to get back to him. So, you know, if he says no or has a different idea or I say that or anybody in the coordination process, you know, especially the managers, if Dave says no, then I think you really need, it's up to the core to say, well, okay, there's a problem, and work it out.
How often, this is an aberration, we almost always do.
No, that's why I was saying. It was this whole thing. I felt like this one's kind of a thing. It was like it just kind of highlighted that.
It seems like rarely. This year, though, the 2-week coordination period has just been.
We've seen that, yeah. And the project shouldn't be allowed to say to just do whatever they want and not have you guys involved in that.
There are times where we say something and they say no, you know, they got to do it. There's only kind of time they can do it, and it's important enough.
That's like, not,
I mean, if it's something
they can't do
where they feel imminent failure of
that's
something,
fine.
That's when they do it.
Let's define that. We have defined that. Let's go back to the definition of that. But if it's just
in general, they're coordinating everything.
They're doing
this.
But Cordy says, "Well, my God, I just want to get this done." And you know, the chief of maintenance says, "Get it done." And so we're just going to do it, and then we'll tell.
No, I don't
later.
Think we have that going on. I don't think it's that draft, you know. But I do think that there's emergencies where people...
We all recognize that, and we accept that, absolutely.
If there's an emergency, absolutely.
And you'll remember that in the aberration that you're talking about here, we did have a NOAA fisheries response that had been a thumbs up on that, so it wasn't just the core...
Don't look at me.
How much your fault?
Don't look at me.
See, well,
the core is awesome. Man, like, you know, you just told us the response back. You know, I know it told us it was okay.
That was true.
Well, I'm saying we still need dispute resolution. I'm not doubting that.
Well,
but
you had two managers. You had Noah saying this, but I don't know if Bill had looked that close to the STP because he's not involved in
his CMT. Response was real early in that process. Yeah. That was short process, and then I saw Russ came out with a response that.
Actually,
I
didn't respond to everyone because I don't.
I didn't see it, but anyway, I saw Russ's response and it was like, you know, there's a difference of opinion. So I expected there to be a resolution developed out of that because.
And I don't think Russ's response went to everyone either. I think they mostly went back to the core to Greg because I don't think I don't think I was seeing those.
Russ went out to everybody.
Yeah, I saw his. That's what clued me in as to
oops,
going to be a difference of opinion on this one.
Good. Yeah. So anyway, dispute resolution. I think that is
something like. I mean, when you see like two managers, like right. me, say, "Hey, we don't think this is a good idea," and I mean, I don't think Bill had because he doesn't go to TMT, so he doesn't get STP runs. And this whole thing was basically centered around like, "Well, our reading flows this. Well, our reading flows this."
Bill never knee jerks.
Yeah,
he never knee jerks.
Well, I think there'd been some discussion back with somebody else who does read STPs on his end. Yeah. Anyway.
So a little discussion is worthwhile. I mean, you just don't want to take one person's yes and throw everybody else's no away.
But no, that STP screwed up. That came from our shop. And anyway, that issue, too, to that end, I just wanted to acknowledge that has been resolved.
I've noticed I no longer am getting that STP anymore.
That's how you resolve it. Don't show Tom.
They updated. They're doing
a
new process.
The
send salmon. So there's a
it's a spreadsheet rather than a
so
text
to the extent this issue closing the loop. This issue should be resolved.
This all comes from the River Forecast Center STP, doesn't it? I mean, isn't that where that comes from?
So the marriage there is that we do the concrete and they do the precip, and then you marry that on Tuesday. We get the concrete. Here's what the concrete's doing. They do. Here's what the precip's
so
doing every day. But our
theirs doesn't consider what the concrete's doing.
On Mondays, we give them that on Monday. Here's what the concrete's doing, and then they do the precip every day. And so, you know, you use the STP, but it's almost always better to go to the
RFC. So the STP that they put on their website, the RFC site,
we give that to them, that data then goes into them on Monday or Tuesday.
So that's coming from you.
It comes from us. And so it's a marriage, it is a marriage of data where we say here's what Dvorak, what you're doing, they say here's where it's raining, and then
what the River Forecast Center puts out is kind of
it's a marriage. Okay. And then we update the marriage on Mondays and Tuesdays.
On Mondays and Tuesdays.
But that's why, as a default, it's always better to go to the RFC site on a Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday because they're updating preset on a daily basis.
Okay.
Or not, but more frequently than.
So you only send them the one thing on Monday?
Yeah, Monday or Tuesday. Monday or Tuesday.
Okay, so they use the same one for the whole week and just update it within preset.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I understand that.
And I'll tell you some more after that, too.
Because
there's more to that. But anyway.
Okay.
Are you done?
Yeah, I'm done.
Okay, so coordination notification forms needing concurrence. Everything is either still in development or no longer needed here. And Lower Granite Unit 1 is still out of service with expected return end of August. Then we're into task group updates, and I think we got two. That's at the FPP change form at the bottom. Tammy's going to get to that just in a second. Task group updates.
We can postpone the updates since we have meetings.
Yep.
Exactly.
So the next thing is a FPP change form at the Dalles for the spill pattern.
No.
I wanted to update on one of those task groups.
Oh, that's right.
Well, so one thing that we're considering that isn't covered is integrating a half duplex into the
We don't know what's been as research is trying to get access to do tagging during dewatering.
In fact, Mary's passcode, I thought, might be the guy's back.
I mean, I think they should definitely
pursue that, but I don't think task groups are necessarily the format for that.
Video. I mean, I've got...
Plus we'll have RT. It was originally because of the big style was, what can you guys do? Gather a bunch of sturgeon.
But John Day coverage.
Does it help you?
I'm sorry. I'm having trouble with these guys. I'm trying to hear you and you
hey,
at the same
Sean,
time.
Could you shut up?
Okay. Then.
So it just hasn't been anything that we have gained any beneficial information from them. Before.
So, I'm sorry. What this is
sturgeon, which sturgeon task group.
Yeah, you know, the only thing I was going to bring up on that is the slow roll issue.
Oh, that's a good point. Is that getting put into the new GDACs?
It's going to be put into the Powerhouse 2 governors.
Okay.
So that part's done.
Okay. And when do we think that's going to actually be implementable?
I don't know when they get... Well, it'll when we have digital governors in Powerhouse 2 built, that will be...
That's kind of what I'm wondering. Yeah. When do we get some digital governors?
I don't know. It's already scheduled, but, I mean, they're scheduled for all of them.
I don't know the date, but it is in the works to be in the program to be able to implement when it is.
Yeah, I'm saying, I know in the works, does that mean a year, 6 months, 10 years?
I haven't heard the date.
Before
the
meantime, we go down that road, we've been talking about John and I.
I've talked a bit about this too.
Ben, the issue of what really happens with slow roll and the opportunity to look at that with the model down in Vicksburg on 17th of whatever, the week of the 17th of September.
Would they be able to monitor that?
Yeah.
Cool. Davidson said they could set the wicket gates in such a position.
To mimic
the issue that John,
a position.
What John brought up was the potential for flow to actually be pulled into the unit from one draft tube and out the other, and that could actually cause a problem with, so we want to look at how that works. There's a perfect opportunity with that model to actually look at slow roll and how they, how we implement it and what happens actually in the draft tubes and the turbine environment itself. And it may tell us something about what's going on there that might say, well, wait a minute, maybe this isn't the right way to do this.
So it's just circulating the draft tube rather than blowing it
though. Could be, instead of blowing them out both tubes, and there's no way it can at the low end of flow. You don't have enough flow to actually go out both tubes. And what I don't know is if you'd ever actually get reverse flow in a tube, but you could. It's possible because the flow is low enough and you have a rope coming off the runner, you could actually just funnel all that out one side and you could be pulling. Actually flow around from the other side, and that could be a problem. It could be worse than what we were trying to do. Well, it's not accomplishing what you wanted,
right?
What you thought.
Well, I guess the question depends, like how far up it pulls stuff in. Because if you just pull up below the turbines, that's not a problem. If you pull
them right up into the runner, probably not. It wouldn't. No, there's no way that would happen
when you try it next time.
But you could
still be not what you want if you pull it around the splitter and then pushing them back up against it. They come out looking like I don't know if they're getting blade strikes or getting slammed against something or what's happening.
They could get slammed against the pier in there or something like that. I mean, there's no splitters in Powerhouse 2.
If you pulled up and the water comes back,
well, there's a vertical splitter between the two.
Yeah. Right, it's the pier. We call it a pier. Yeah.
It depends on how fast the water comes by at first. Not super fast.
Well, and we can look at that. I mean, this is a good reason why you guys need to go down to Mississippi in September.
Nice try. I'll probably be there, though.
Good. I don't know if it's able to do it there, but they do want the kind of detail that I can't really provide them other than a guess is, okay, we're going to put it in the digital governor, how long do you want it at each position?
Right.
Which I'm like,
right. And we may not want it there long at some of those levels until it gets up to a certain cue through the runner. So I think just looking at it there, that's a good idea from John here to get
a chance to
go down there and look at it.
I didn't think they'd be able to do with those. With the model, but if they can do it, we should definitely do it before we implement this for long term.
Right. Yeah, your timing is really good.
Yeah, I mean, we want to make sure that going through this process doesn't severely cut into the other thing we want to look at while we're down there.
But yeah,
I can talk to Bob about that.
Yeah, and I'm thinking it may be a morning when we get there a little earlier than everybody else, maybe show up at 7 instead of 8, and spend some time as they bring those that runner up speed. It's just a motor on there. Apparently they can adjust it any way you want, which surprised me, so that's good.
So you'll bring back an update to the October meeting?
I'm not going to bring back an update. I'm just making a suggestion through John here. I'm not part of this. I'm not on that group. I'm suggesting the group should. 17th of September through the end of that week. That's Monday. So that's that week.
Will still be good. Hello. Bring your shovel.
Sounds good.
Okay. Sorry for jumping fast on you there.
No,
John, you want to go ahead then with your AFF mods?
The charter has been submitted, and it's, you know, sitting with the district managers right now. Basically, we're waiting for on resourcing and to get a PM assigned, and we expect that to occur soon.
So there's a high likelihood it will get started this winter?
I hope so. You know, I mean, we see this as, you know, similar to Sean's Lamprey type of task group that's making that trap up there and how swiftly they've been moving. We're hoping we can do the same.
Yeah, no, I mean, because there's a lot of pushback that if we don't get this done, then that impacts the ability to do the adult testing for next year. So I just want to make sure that's all understood.
I go as fast as I can.
I know you are. Okay. I'm just saying, you might want to impart that.
A multi-million dollar program is waiting for you.
Okay.
No pressure.
I actually have talked to Bonneville Maintenance on just feeling it out to see if we could get some support from that end too. And that's within the realm of possibility. So.
Okay.
Cool.
Yeah, I know of CRFM funding, so that shouldn't be an issue. It's
right.
More of a matter of
it's a manpower type thing.
Any other questions? Are you going to, because I see you got like evaluate the Grizzly trying to make hydro things. Are you going to pull together like at least a conference call like that and say, hey, this is what we're going to be trying, or say the project?
Oh yeah, as we develop a plan. Oh yeah, you know.
And say, hey, we're going to do this. Yeah. I get my researchers there. They can say that. Yeah, that's great. Or oh, that's going to make this problem, and then we can just think through that.
Right.
I would get beat up profusely at the office if they come out and say, oh, they just changed all this and now we can't use the facility this way. So I just want to make sure I've got some input so they at least can see what changes we made and
right.
What potential impacts on them for how the...
Yes. Well, I don't even think we know exactly what the change will be, so that needs to be a discussion, like a 30% or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
Everybody sit down and say, okay, now that we got a PM, we got a person, and if you're going that route, I don't know.
We know what we need to look at.
Right.
We've identified that.
That, and then
we've got some ideas on how you do it.
That's the issues, is that Grizzly, you know, the drain, how do we get at that? If we do, or moving, you know, there's the plating over of the rail pool and the tank and the getting fish out around the corner, all that stuff.
How do you slow down, flow through that?
That Grizzly, yeah, that's all needs to be talked about.
Okay.
All right.
Probably sometime pretty soon to have a little discussion about that.
Yeah.
Sort of idling along for a year or so here now. So.
As soon as we find out who the PM is.
Yeah.
Okay.
So for the Bonneville spill pattern.
So I think you are next with the John Day's updated spill pattern.
The Dalles.
The Dalles
updated spill pattern. You all have seen it, I imagine?
Yeah.
We're implementing it. It's just a formality for the change form.
Which one's this?
But if you have issues, let me know. The Dalles.
Yeah, no problems.
That's
good.
That's it.
Okay, so I think potential forms, we don't have to cover that. Does anybody have anything else that wasn't covered? Obviously, you guys have a couple task group meetings after this afternoon. So
you have a great drive back, and I'm going to use test just when he's done because I want to go watch the Olympic soccer match. So
soccer match?
That's over, isn't it?
No, it started 11:45.
Do we do our task groups there?
Yeah, soccer plays fast. That's exactly what I think most soccer matches.
We're on metric time.
Yeah.
So we have task group, the VBS, are we going to meet?
Yep.
Is that one of them?
Yep.
I'm still trying to figure out what we're going to do for the Bonneville unit operations. We haven't no information, new information.
It is VBS task group and Bonneville unit operation range.
Okay. Go back to Bonneville again.
All the same people, so we can just...
So is FPOM over?
Yeah, FPOM's officially over.